Get new wind food. New wind food.
Good choice of music.
Welcome, everyone, to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, April 13th, 2021. Ian gave me these wide eyes. That's Ian Ferguson.
That's me.
I'm Pat Contrary. He looked at me like I was dinner for a second. We got a fun podcast for you all. I'm in a chipper mood right now. Ian's in a decent mood as well. We're both kind of rested, even though Ian says he wasn't. I think Ian's more rested than he usually is.
I've been moisturizing at night, so I probably look a little bit more.
Oh, is that why?
Yeah.
On the show.
try not to look so dead to the world when I wake up in the morning.
We'll be talking about the Castlevania Dreamcast Proto and some drama surrounding it. Does Nintendo need new IPs? A serious question for a serious podcast. Atari NFTs and blockchain. And you. And we'll do a Patreon poll topic and some voice messages. Ian, how was your weekend? What did you end up doing? The weekend now includes anything pre-podcast, so it's like Thursday-ish to like Monday. It's more than just the weekend. No, it's like, you know,
four days. I hung out with the Neen. That's what I refer to the cat now.
Spike is the Neen?
The Neen. Nino for boy, just the Neen. I feel like as Spike...
Hey, ain't no boy.
I think as Spike gets older, I give him different nicknames for different eras of his life, and this is the Neen era. But he's been good.
Call him the finger biter era. How about that?
he's been real cuddly. I played Monster Hunter. I worked. I made hamburger helper for the first time in...
Makes a great meal?
In a couple decades.
Why, Ian? You need some cash to help you out?
While I'm in a decent mood today, I was not in a great mood on Friday, and I wanted to cook something, and I went to the grocery store. What happened was, is I was on Twitter, and some people that, you know, I believe their names are Eric and Melissa. We see them every year at Portland Retro Gaming Convention. They brought us the big jar of Reese's Pieces the one year.
Oh, yes.
They had posted something about...
They did. I didn't get one of those. You got Reese's Pieces?
I shared some. Actually, I might not have shared them.
No, I don't think you did.
I might not have shared them. But they had posted something about Hamburger Helper, and it got stuck in my mind, and as I went to the grocery store, I walked down an aisle, and I saw, there it was, Hamburger Helper. So I grabbed a box of it,
and I grabbed a pound of
ground turkey, and I made it, and Vonnie, like, loved it, because she was like, it's just like this crap comfort food. She's like, it's great, and I just felt so bad for serving my wife.
It's just seasoning in a packet, right? That's what it is.
It's some pasta. Yeah,
it comes with the pasta.
Yeah, right. It's a macaroni and cheese box essentially that you
add your meat.
That you add meat to. But yeah, I don't know where I was going with that. I just felt bad. But
I felt bad that you bought it in the first place. But it's cheap, right? It's like $1.50 or whatever.
It's like $1.20 and
$1.20 in 2000 is $1.20,
and it's that easy to consume. Pap.
So that in the 80s,
love.
it was like 30 cents, yeah. In the 80s.
It's soft, probably loaded with monosodium glutamate.
Oh, absolutely. That'll puff you up. You'll retain water.
You're not going to... No. MSG doesn't do that, Patrick.
I was thinking of sodium.
Oh, yeah. Sodium will. Sodium can. Monosodium glutamate
No, sodium
is
will.
MSG.
Not it can. It will. Okay. That's what I thought.
I'm just saying there's no such thing as MSG syndrome.
I wasn't thinking about that.
What else happened? Oh, I scheduled my first vaccine appointment. I get that tomorrow.
All right, Pat won't be at risk anymore.
I'm good. I'm excited about that. And I went to my dentist yesterday. The root canal I was supposed to have ended up not being a root canal. He was like, no, this really isn't as bad as I thought.
Isn't that good news to hear?
It's great.
I was going to get, when my knee got reworked on in 2011, they were going to do that that bad procedure, mm-hmm. where you make more, you drip out the marrow from your knee to create more cartilage in your knee, because I said the doctor at the time, not to make it about me, but this is like, it's good to get good news like this, because I was going to get surgery where it was going to be like I would have been laid up for 6 months,
yeah,
where it's like you can't do anything with that knee because it has to congeal the marrow to make or Carlos, the dumb doctor said, I hate all these surgeons. They all are assholes. No bedside manner. He's like, oh, yeah, you got the knee of like a knees of like a 55-year-old, your left knee. I'm like, he said, yeah, you can't be doing anything unless you get the surgery. I'm like, really? I've been running. I've been doing other stuff. So they open up my knee. Oh, you have cartilage in your knee still. I'm like, all right, thanks. So when I came to, they didn't do that procedure, which would have been bad for me. It would have, like, my life would have ended for like several months. So it's good. For your teeth.
No, yeah, exactly.
And for your wallet.
I like a doctor that doesn't go for the automatically most expensive procedure. He took an X-ray and he thought that was going to be a root canal. And he got like he got a millimeter in there and he was like, no, this is fine.
Now I'm picturing one of my favorite Married Children episodes. It's like season 5 where Al goes to the dentist. And it's Joe Flaherty from SCTV is the crazy dentist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I'm now thinking of Ian where like it's going to be catastrophic. It's like, you know what? I think we can save a couple of those teeth in there.
I like my dentist. He's a weird guy. He's really into the artistry of it. He gets really excited when he picks like the right shade for the crown and stuff like that. He's like, no, I think, oh, this is going to be a beautiful shade for you. This is going to be good. It's going to be good. And then like he's like, oh, this is perfect. He's like, come here, look at this. To the
color of your crown, but you don't see the crowns in your teeth, do you?
Yeah, you do.
If it's back, you won't see it.
All right, come here.
No one's looking at your teeth like that, Ian.
Oh, I know, but that's what I'm saying. He's really into this aspect of it, which is not something
that
a lot of people are.
It's not like picking a color of a tooth, but well, so your teeth are in better shape now.
I have one more dentist appointment to go for two small cavities, and then my mouth is caught up. I just have to go back for a cleaning in 6 months.
You got to take care of. I recommended the water pick for Ian. It's a life changer. Water pick.
I take a toothbrush to work now.
Water pick. Water pick, everyone. It's worth the $30 for a standard water pick. It's better than flossing. It kills the tartar. It's fantastic.
So, yeah, that was my weekend.
It's fantastic.
What did you do?
The water pick. I was going to say something else about the water pick. Oh, no. So real quick about the vaccines is that in California, they're going to be available to everyone starting the 15th. Of April. Everyone's 16 plus. So that's great. So Ian's going to get his, and I'll get mine soon afterwards. And someone from Indiana is calling me for some reason.
Fuck Indiana.
Wow.
Well, I mean, don't. I mean, that's, if you live in Indiana, I don't mean you any harm.
That's harsh, Ian.
I just meant in this specific instance.
God, man. They're going to the Indiana demo. What did Pat do this weekend? I worked on, well, I was working on the book, but I did play Pac-Man 99. I first saw our pal Andre play it last week after my Twitch stream every Wednesday, twitch.tv/contracode. I do the 80s thing. Afterwards, we raided Andre. And Andre was playing Pac-Man 99, which first came out. They announced it only like 2 days after they got rid of, Super Mario 35. They said, oh, we got Battle Royale coming out. Bandai Namco, Pac-Man 99. I saw Andre play it, and I couldn't get a good feel for the game watching Andre play it. It looked interesting. Like any, this is the third major battle royale game on the Switch after Tetris 99 and Super Mario, and I played both of them. Obviously, talked about both before, so I played that last night, and boy, does it stink! I cannot mince words about how much I do not enjoy Pac-Man 99.
It pains me to say it, and it's also rare that I think we're both on the same page with this. But
we're talking about, we were usually on the same page when it comes to stuff.
I have not enjoyed it so far either.
I tried about a dozen matches to see if I could like get into it, and Pac-Man is an interesting game where I don't think it translates as well as something like a Super Mario. Pac-Man is a very super simplistic game versus Super Mario, even versus Tetris. It's super simplistic Pac-Man, and it's always the same sort of scenario and strategy you're looking at consistently. It's the same thing over and over again. It's the same, the fruit's in the same spot. The power pellets are in the same spot. The ghosts had the same behavior, you know, coming after you. It's the same thing. So I'm looking at this game, and like Super Mario 35, I can get into and sort of like devise and learn my own strategies as I went.
Yeah.
I couldn't do this with this game. This game was just survival, and you just keep going, and hopefully you're just twitchy and good. You don't have to be twitching and good to that extent with Super Mario 35. You can sort of play at your own pace for the most part and be decent. I couldn't crack above the top 30 in this game. I think I got to 31. I was around the 30s to like 40 the whole time.
My top was, I think, 18, with the majority of my finishes being in the 30 to 35 range.
So it's sort of typical where First off, the Switch controller, the Pro Controller sucks for this game.
The Pro Controller it and sucks. The Joy-Cons suck for it.
I thought...
Real bad.
I thought...
Joystick, D-pad, or buttons, none of the ways that the game is playable are...
Or designed, really.
Or optimal. The only way that I was able to play it without... being extremely frustrated was with the a friend sent me Joy-Cons that sent me a Joy-Con that he modded with an actual D-pad, and I could play it with that, but playing it with the Pro Controller D-pad, absolutely not. It just constantly registers left, right, up and down when you're pressing.
Which is interesting because on Super Mario 35, I never had that issue. I never misfired on Super Mario 35. I misfired a lot.
I did in Super... I misfire a lot on Tetris. In Mario, it's just less noticeable, I think, because you're mostly going left to right. You're not constantly
going
pressing up,
left,
down.
Not... It was bad.
You're not using all four directions on the D-pad.
So I said, okay, the D-pad stinks. Maybe the little joystick is better.
It was better, but
it
not
was
great.
Better. But I still fucked up.
Yeah,
and if I didn't fuck up from those, let's just put it this way: if I didn't screw up to that extent, I probably would have cracked lower than the 30s because that killed me sometimes. Like half the time I die was because of that.
Yeah, I don't like blaming the controller, but Vonnie was watching me, and there were times where I would literally just be going straight, and and it has the grinding mechanic that's in every Pac-Man since CE, where if you hold up early, you'll see a little spark when you turn. You'll turn the corner faster.
Sure.
So I'm trying to grind, and I'm trying to get ready. And Vonnie just watched me five times just going this way and then boop, right back into a ghost. She's like, what are you doing? And I'm trying to fucking go up.
Yeah,
I can't do it.
It's actually the one time where the Joy-Con separate buttons would probably be the best way to play it, but I didn't try it.
Yeah, actually, I didn't try that either. I tried the D-pad, my D-pad, and the joystick.
But the separate buttons is what you need to play this game. It was unplayable otherwise. So I get into it. So basically, this is the gist of the game. And I did not look up a review because Ian on the phone told me, he's like, I don't like these games that don't have any tutorial to tell you what the hell's going on. And this doesn't tell you what's going on. So when you get into it, this is what you got to do. There's these, on the left and right side of the key, that's the stage name for Pac-Man, there's these little mini white little ghosts, outlines of ghosts. You pick those up. What happens when you pick those up is they then trail one of the ghosts coming after you.
Right.
When you get a power pellet, they all become ghosts you can eat. When you eat those ghosts, you send them to
the
other boards.
Send the Pac-Men to other boards.
You send the white Pac-Man that when you go into, you slow down. That's basically the entire game.
That's what
when the fruits come up, you get them and then re-register those lines, those two vertical lines of the little mini white ghosts. That's the game right there. I couldn't see anything about clearing the boards for a bonus because stuff keeps coming back. Maybe there's something there with the regular pellets, but this is my issue with this game. Besides the fact that it's way too quick, Super Mario 35, you can play for 10-15 minutes. These are done in minutes, low minutes.
I actually like the quickness. I don't like my big problem is I don't like the little Pac-Men that appear on the board because they don't appear in any way that you can really strategically maneuver around, and the slowing down is... It feels so wrong in Pac-Man.
Well, here's the thing. Super Mario 35 and Tetris 99 sort of rewards you for how you normally play those games and be good. This doesn't.
This is
it's a minefield that you have to go through, and then there's a lot of luck thrown in it, it seems like, at the same time. And then once you get to the red Pac-Man that you can't eat or avoid at all that come after you, it's a crapshoot. At least to me, it feels like more like a crapshoot at that point.
When I sat down, I realized it feels so weird because you're playing a game that's all about efficiency and score,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to progress necessarily. Whereas Mario is about it just doesn't feel right. You're right. You have to absolutely kind of change how you about the game.
Because even subconsciously, I was trying to clear pellets. And it's well, no, you don't need to do that. And if they had based the game on clearing the stage, I think that would appeal to me more.
Clear stages and send ghosts.
Do something like that.
Eat ghosts and send ghosts. Create chains to send faster ghosts.
Yes.
But they didn't need the ghost Pac-Man. I think the ghost Pac-Man is really what kind of screws it up for me.
Yeah, even the ones that just appear there. Before you even get to the red ones that follow you and you can't, they can't be eaten. You have to get
a power pellet.
No. I think that when I got it, they still ate me. The red ones, I thought, you can't.
It could be.
Because that's when it's below, that's when it gets into not overtime, but it crunches. So yeah, super disappointed. I like Pac-Man. I did a video on him last year. Go watch it. No one watched it. And I think there could have been a game here if it was like, clear the stages, and then we'll switch around. Maybe we'll switch around the patterns. Maybe we randomize the patterns or do something like that. You know, and that's part of the challenge. You make the patterns. Maybe it's like Miss Pac. You know, Miss Pac-Man has like those parts where you can't escape. Mm-hmm. Maybe those are thrown in as to your enemies. Something like that would change up the stage. Something a little more creative than sending white blobs.
Yeah.
That's not creative to me. That's just...
No.
No.
What bothers me is that... we're getting along on this topic already.
I know, but it annoyed me, this game.
No, it annoyed me too, because there is a perfect fucking Pac-Man game for this style of gameplay.
Yes.
That they have done fuck all in terms of actually trying to get it on a system in a way you can play, and that's Pac-Man Battle Royale. Mm-hmm. You can get it on your iPhone, but you need fucking codes, and you need to be there to play it with four people. You can't just jump into a random game. They've never just put Pac-Man Battle Royale on the fucking App Store or an online store and let you match up. It's the simplest thing they could do, and everyone who plays that game at an arcade loves it. I introduce it to everyone I possibly can at conventions. It's amazing.
It's fantastic.
While I have not played it, I think the Pac-Man Battle Royale game that they did for Stadia, Pac-Man Tube, whatever.
Oh yeah, got
Pac-Man
coach.
Tube Battle. I think that is essentially, it's a bunch of Pac-Man Battle Royales that end up, they throw you, they basically, yes, it starts with a bunch in like a bracket, and you just go towards one.
So it'd be Battle Royale 99 or whatever, where you go down.
But
one.
It's playing the smaller instances, sure, of that game, and you just keep progressing.
That would have been better.
That's brilliant.
I would pay $15-$20 for that.
Me too.
Speaking of paying, I ain't paying the money for this shit. I'm not paying for the single player or any of the themes. I saw Andre, it's $30 if you buy the bundle where you get the single player offline mode, and then you get, there's 20 theme packs that change it to all these classic Namco games. You got Mappy, you got even Rolling Thunder, you got Galaga, you got Rally X, and a bunch of others. And no Miss Pac-Man, because probably weird rights issues. And there's like four or five Pac-Man things. If you buy them all individually, Ian,
it's like $40.
It's more than that. Mm. It's $15 for the offline, and then it's $2 each for the boards. It's $55 to buy individually. I think $30 is way too much for that to begin with. If it was like $15-$20, maybe. Because it'll be more difficult. I saw Andre play it with like... Albatross, Rolling Thunder, or Galaga. I can't picture getting it. The themes are actually nice. I'm not putting on the themes.
No,
the themes are nice. It changes all the visuals, and it changes all the music and the things like that. And even like on Dig Dug, the music only is there when you walk. So and it stops.
No,
so it's interesting.
Well, that's what kills me about it. I really want to like this. It brings me no joy to hate on a Pac-Man game. I mean,
no.
Namco and Pac-Man are like my bread and butter, which is why I probably feel so strongly about this. But all the DLC is, from what I've seen, the themes are actually done really well if you are into Namco's old games and licenses. Sure. If it was a good game, I honestly would buy the DLC, no problem. I'd be like, okay, 30 is a bit much. I would prefer this to be 20, but I would have done it if it was a game that I could see myself enjoying. I'm glad I didn't just assume it was going to be good, because I would be miserably upset at spending that money.
I didn't tell Andre. I don't have the heart to tell Andre how bad I think this game is. I got to text him like, I did not have fun at all.
No.
And I thought at least, here's the thing. And before you say, well, Pat, maybe you suck at it. I was not great at Tetris 99. I enjoyed Tetris 99 a lot.
I was actually going to say that too, because
it's not about that. I'm better at Pac-Man than at Tetris, and I did not have nearly the time I had playing the Tetris game.
There are always people who say it's because you're not good, and that's exactly. No. I was going to use the exact same example. I am miserable at Tetris, and I am extra miserable at Tetris 99, and I've put probably 10 hours into
Tetris
99. Tetris
99 is head and shoulders above this game.
It's a fun game.
And we didn't get to the fact that I couldn't even figure out the ghost setting, how there was two sides to it. I did not know what that meant. I don't know if that meant like it's for that side and that side, but you used both sides. There was eight things going on.
Yeah, well, one is, so I think you can
trail,
I think
power,
you can affect,
or whatever.
So I think if you like pick trail, you'll somehow get more of the ghosts.
Okay,
or
yes,
if you
I
pick
saw that.
Speed, you'll be speedier.
Yes.
So you can pick some sort of advantage for you.
Oh, so it's offensive and defensive.
You can pick some sort of advantage for you, and then you can pick who you're sending the ghosts to.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense. Because that's right. Because if you get the fruit and you do that, it sets speed up sometimes. That's
yes.
Right.
So anyway, whatever. Moving on. We've spent too much time on
it. It's disappointing.
It was very, very upsetting.
Real quick, the passing of DMX At 50 years old, unfortunately. He was one of the biggest rappers in the late 90s. He was like one of the soundtrack. If you made a soundtrack of the late 90s, he's on there. DMX. He had like 5 number one hits, you know, crossover. And he passed away. And he was a supporter in a small way of the NES Marathon. He retweeted at least 1 year the NES Marathon. There was always NES Marathons. People try to get like celebrities to tweet about it. And we got like, I don't know if we got Corey Feldman once. We got a few celebrities. And DMX was aware of the NES Marathon, at least. So,
at one point in time.
Rest in power, DMX.
All I can really say is, I mean, it's been a weekend of people saying things about it, is addiction is ugly, and I wish there were more resources for people in this country.
He's only 50. That's, like, so weird. It seemed like he'd be older. He's only 50 years old. He was so young when he was top of the game there. Speaking of game, GameStop seeks a new CEO. So, good old George Sherman, AutoZone guy, seems like he's on the outs there, because they're trying to with this guy from Chewy, the online pet store company, that the guy that is now a minority owner in the company is trying to turn. He wants to turn GameStop into a digital powerhouse, like he did with Chewy before he sold it for like $1 billion. The guy, that's what he's trying to do. So looking to replace current CEO George Sherman as it shifts from its brick and mortar roots to an e-commerce focus, Reuters said, citing unidentified people familiar with the situation. We didn't even talk about Reggie Fils-Aimé left the company.
No.
A few weeks ago. He left the board.
Yeah.
He's done. He got his check and he's done. Less than
he made it sound, I mean, even it sounded like it was going to be a temporary thing when he joined. I can't remember the exact wording, but something was like, I'm here and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, they probably pumped the stock price a little bit at the time. So, Sherman was CEO for 2 years. GameStop didn't comment. So, yeah, this is Cohen coming along. Ryan Cohen, he's the Chewy guy. Who wants to turn around GameStop instead of enjoying his $1 billion. He wants to try to turn around GameStop. Maybe he liked it as a teenager. This guy's not that old. So I don't know. I don't know if this is going to work. I just know that the AutoZone guy was not going to work. So it seems like he's going to be gone pretty soon.
No, I mean, we talked about that when it happened. Working at AutoZone, a place that sells things that you constantly need,
that you can't get a digital version of through your PlayStation
is,
4.
Is very different.
I can't go on the Xbox and get a carburetor. You know, it's not going to work out for me to do that. And GameStop, the stock is still, it's not at the peak. It's still going to go down at some point. And I'm guessing at this point GameStop can sell, they could sell stock to get a cash infusion to take advantage of the higher stock price. They couldn't originally because of SEC's rules and regulations, which I don't get into. But they could. But the stock ain't going to get back to where it was.
No.
It seems like the meme stock thing is already dying off a little bit. It seems like they realize that, you can't really sustain that over a huge amount of time.
Right.
It's got to be very specific stocks and moments. You can't keep it going.
They knew how to
they gained
build it
that
up,
one,
they,
yeah.
But they don't know necessarily how to exit this scenario.
Sure. EA granted a patent for dynamic difficulty. You're the big EA guy, Ian. You know about the FIFA Ultima.
I'm the big
you're
EA
the expert.
Guy. I know something about it, I guess.
If we do video game years 2017, you're the guy to talk about the FIFA Ultimate. I'll be sitting there next to you like, well, I don't know what's happening.
Basically, EA has been granted a patent for new dynamic difficulty in
new difficulty.
Games. And people are concerned that it's going to be used for Ultimate Team, basically to make the AI harder, or basically make it so that people are afraid that it's going to make it so that their great cards are no longer going
aren't
to really
as great as they should be.
Yeah, to keep you constantly buying and playing.
They're using that Karma engine they got from Mimico. That's what's happening.
Difficulty adjustment technology has been around forever. It's fucking called rubber banding. I'm sure they've got some special way of doing it, but yeah.
Oh, they were granted a patent, and technically it's different.
Yeah, there's got to be some sort of
cloud-based where, it's going to each individual player and being like, well, how much money did you spend, maybe? What is your player loadout?
They haven't spent any money in a while. Let's make it more difficult for them, so they'll go spend more money.
It's been a while.
Fuck. Hate it. yeah, if I was a person who was playing this, well, one, I wouldn't be, but if I was playing this, this would be the time to get out and stop giving EA your money.
But most people won't know this. Most people play, that's a problem. It's not like they're, it's not like
that's
they're
why you
do
listen to the CU podcast.
That's right. All you Brits and Europeans and the few people in the U.S. that like soccer. That's why you listen to us. But no, but seriously, it's not like they're gonna have to do a warning legally, be like, well, we're using a system to have your players play like shit if you're doing well. I mean, there should be a warning. Because all of a sudden you'd be like, wow, I can't beat this team. I could beat them last week.
Right.
So I got to buy more packs of non-fungible guys, which we'll get into that later.
Non-fungible.
Non-fungible player. No, you can funge. These players are fungible because you can trade them.
You can funge them.
You can funge them in some way.
You can trade a non-fungible token.
You can't trade it. It's the ownership. Well,
yeah, you can sell it to someone else.
Oh, that's not well.
Fungible, non-fungible means that it cannot be replaced by another thing that is the same.
We'll get to that later topic. Past the intro, people.
Moving on. Time for some plugs.
Oh boy. You got the ultimatenintendo.com where you can buy totally fungible books. Blu-rays, pins are semi-fungible, RBI baseball stickers at ultimatenintendo.com. If you're in Europe, you can go to pukapukagames.co.uk. I just got another shipment in of NES and Super Nintendo books. No, the Super Nintendo ones just sold out again. They're more on the way, though. I'm trying to set up a hardier European distributor for now. Our pal Kieran at Puka Puka Games is your source right there. I'm on cameo.com/PatContry. I got to do a shout out later. There.
Exciting news.
Are you going to get on the Cameo?
No.
Am I refer you?
Probably
so I can,
not.
So I can take some of Cameo's money when you get paid?
I am probably never going
Come
to
on,
do it.
Come on, Ian.
This is like the most camera time I need. Exciting times.
I'm excited, Ian.
In my world. Streets of Rage 4 DLC has been announced. Very excited about it. The Mr. X Nightmare DLC is coming this year. So Streets of Rage 4 was my game of the year last year. I think it is one of the greatest video games ever made. I stand by that. It is probably the best beat 'em up I have played.
I need someone to make like how all the websites, when they go to conventions, they do the little plaque thing. I need an Ian face for his publication for Game of the Year, Game of the Year. We need someone to make that now.
Yeah, I will give out my own game of my own awards.
You know, back at E3, they used to put their like stamps and ribbons like for their games. Someone would walk around and literally put something on there. We need an Ian version of that.
Basketball Classics should get one. So anyway, the Streets of Rage 4 DLC is looking hot, looking good. New characters. Big news for fans. Estelle is going to be a playable character. She was the cop character enemy who becomes sympathetic during the very touching storyline of Streets of Rage 4.
We're getting to the lore of Streets of Rage 4. Lore
of Streets of Rage 4. But
she's a tweener.
But I'm very excited to be able to play as her. New levels.
She's the one with the cool hair I'm looking at.
Yes.
She's ripped with cool hair and like body armor.
Yeah, she's fucking sweet.
Thighs of steel.
Her and Mappy, only good cops. New music as well is coming. I think it's going to be very exciting. I do feel bad for anyone who bought a physical copy because...
Do feel bad.
Because this game is no longer complete anymore.
But you can get the real copy then get the DLC, though.
But the whole thing of these physical copies is it's supposed to be like, it's everything. You buy it once and you're done.
But is it, though? I mean...
Well, that's the problem. We're getting to the point where that's not true. I have the physical soundtrack for this game. Three LPs. Are they going to send me an expansion LP?
That's mail to you.
I would like the option to buy an expansion LP.
Yeah.
For this,
they'll give you one of those little mini CDs.
So there's also going to be a free update that adds some balance, adds some balance patches, and I think that adds the music, the characters, and the levels. I think are going to be paid.
Would I like this game?
DLC.
Oh, I never played it.
I don't know. It's fucking fantastic. Do you like good beat 'em ups? No, you just like Double Dragon.
Fuck you, Ian. I love Final Fight. It's one of my favorite games.
Did I tell you I've got a Final Fight board on the way?
No, let's not gloss over this insult you just threw at me. I'm trying to gloss by it.
I don't... I've only been talking about this game for a year. Would I like this? No, Pat. I'm just talking up bullshit.
I'm just trying to get you to give me the soft sell on it. I liked the original ones in the Genesis. They just weren't my favorite games for beat-em-ups. They were all right. I liked Final Fight style better. That's all.
I like Final Fight a lot, but I think Streets of Rage 4 really just nails everything. So good.
Yeah, that's right. I don't like beat 'em ups. I don't like Spider-Man Arcade, X-Men Arcade, Simpsons Arcade. Never talk about those ever.
Just a big Double Dragon fan.
Every other week, I complain about how Ninja Turtles Arcade was never ported back in the day.
Ninja Turtles Arcade? You mean Simpsons Arcade.
Ninja Turtles Arcade never came out back in the day on a system. The original Ninja Turtles Arcade game. Why are you looking at me like that?
Came out on the NES.
That doesn't count.
It's a port, Pat.
That doesn't count. That's bullshit.
It's a port.
That game sucks.
I don't like it.
A real 16-bit that looks like the arcade version.
Sure.
A Turtles in Time version. That doesn't count. You're not going to insult me.
You want to talk about Alex Kidd?
Bullshit. Sure.
Talk about it.
I'm all ramped up. Fucking ridiculous.
Look, I had to take a Double Dragon dig. It wouldn't be me if I did
a triple
it.
D? A Double Dragon dig?
A triple D. A Double Dragon dig.
It's been a while since
it's
that
like
happened.
You can't
All right.
never not hit God, the goddamn buttons.
We're in rare form.
Rare
form. Today. We're in rare 2015 form. Pre-NES Guidebook form. We don't care about anything. Alex Kidd in Miracle World DX. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
What the fuck? So they announced a game with this trailer. It's going to be on June 24th. I love these short release dates after trailers. This is how it should always be. No more than like 7 weeks.
That's great.
8 weeks. It's going to be on PC, Steam, and Epic Games Store, PS5, PS4, Xbox Series 1, Xbox One, blah, 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 and Switch. They always have Switch last. And that Switch thing. So if you love Alex Kidd in Miracle World, you know I do. This is your upgraded version of it with cuter graphics. It's still a monkey guy. And you still got your punch going on, and you're still basically the three things everyone knows about the game: you punch, you get a motorcycle and other vehicles, and you play
rock, paper, scissors.
Which in this
John Ken Po,
yes, which is like a highlight of this trailer, which is why I don't like Alex Kidd in Miracle World. Is that like if that's the memorable thing about your game is that we have to defeat all these enemies with something that's random, but really is not random. I don't like it. Oh, is it instant? Is it instant switching back and forth between that and the 8-bit version? I believe so. They do show it in the trailer.
I like it when they do that.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
It looks nice.
I wonder if future game will do something like that. I don't know. But anyway, so it looks interesting. I never was big on it. I reviewed the game back in 2014, where Frank was trying to make the Struthfully, and Ian shows up and yells at me in my room. Classic episode. It's like a mess for some Christmas, but do you like Alex Kidd in Miracle World? Are you excited for this? Will you give this a shot? That's a no.
I'm going to be perfectly honest. I will probably pass. I have bought a lot of these. It's not even just the Alex Kidd in Miracle
World. Like the
Dragon
Trap one.
I bought that, and it's fantastic. Like, it's gorgeous. It sure. really
yeah,
is.
These look great.
It really is, but there's such... I have the game on PC Engine, and it's they're such faithful reproductions that flip between the graphics and the original model that it's the exact same game. I really like the art, and it's nice to see it, but
I don't like the game that much.
I can go back and play it.
I don't like the boss battles in the game. I don't like the rock paper scissor. I don't like the it's a little obtuse at times with the power ups and the items. From what I remember the last time I played it on the Master System, I'm just not a fan of it. I try to be, every time I go back to it, hopefully they switch the fucking punch and jump buttons to be correct.
Yeah.
Or
holy
jump
shit.
Is on the outside and punch is on the, oh my God.
Yeah,
you're killing me, Sega. You're killing me. What are you doing to me? But no, there's some nice stuff. The vehicle stuff is cool and cute, even though, you know, as soon as you get a vehicle, it's gone sometimes because you hit a red ball. It's ridiculous. The punching thing, the punches are too short in the game.
Yeah.
If you get a power up, it's better. But anyway, I try to like Alex Kidd. I try.
Yeah, just not,
I try.
Just not that one.
Excuse me. The other one's good. I'm soured on the whole series.
Let's talk about the PS4.
Okay, go for it, Ian.
What's PS4 will reportedly no longer
allegedly
play physical and digital games offline with a bad or missing CMOS battery. I don't really know what that means technically, what a CMOS battery is. However, this is bad. This is bad, and this is coming on a lot of anti-preservation PlayStation shit, which is just not making them look good.
The CMOS battery is the same thing like in your computer. It holds all the internal clock stuff.
Okay, so it's just an internal battery in the way that most internal...
It's the same thing as one like your computer.
Serves the purpose. Okay. Yeah. So if the CMOS battery fails on your PlayStation 4 and you are not connected to the internet and you try to play any game, you will get a CE30391-6 error.
Talk technical to me, baby. Turns me on.
Yeah, it's, I mean, this is awful. I have no idea what can be done to fix that, if it's something that Sony can decide or not decide to do on their end. But as of right now, it looks like within a set number of time, we are going to have PlayStation 4s that are unable to do anything if they are not hooked up to a network. Eventually, networks are going to go down and batteries are going to die, and that's going to be a lot of shit.
Because it has to be from, is it because it has to be?
I was trying to finish my thought, but I couldn't finish my thought.
Oh, I didn't think I was interrupting you. Stop talking.
No, I was thinking. Anyways, continue.
Oh, you Dreamcast now?
Yes, it's thinking.
From what I've read or gathered, it's because it has to do with linking to achievements, and some achievements are time based or other. So, like, if you can't have a time in your console, you can't have achievements. You can't link to the. You can't play. It sounds stupid as hell. That's the bottom line. It sounds like there's got to be a way around this or some firmware update to change this bullshit.
Yeah.
This is so anti-preservation, I can't think of anything else. Not that those batteries go right away, but they can eventually go.
Right. Extremely anti-consumer.
Half the ones in the Saturn that you find are gone. You have to replace the ones in the Saturn.
Sure.
You know, to hold the language. That's why you turn on a new Saturn. If you keep doing the time and you keep doing the language, that's because the internal little... It's like, you know, the bigger watch battery. It's gone. Same thing on your computer. So it's horrible news. It's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not good.
Then it replacing it sucks. I mean, you got to replace. You got to fucking crack open your then all the settings are gone. And this is bad. It's bad. It's bad.
Let's talk about something a little crazy, though. Let's talk about something a little weird. At the beginning of this podcast, I was negative about a Pac-Man game, which is just absolute bizarro world shit.
Negative on Namco, Ian.
Negative on Namco.
N-O-N.
Is not negative on Namco is not something that I would ever expect from me. And I would not expect me to ever say this currently, but I am going to say I'm kind of interested in a Zack Snyder movie. So Army of the Dead, the trailer for the new Zack Snyder movie, came out this morning, as far as I could tell, probably right before we started doing this podcast. And I watched it and I want to see it because it's a zombie movie starring Dave Bautista and Tig Notaro. And it looks extraordinarily dumb. It's not as dark and blue as, I mean, judging
not
by...
Not as desaturated?
Yeah, not as desaturated as his superhero movies. It's actually kind of bright looking for a zombie movie. It's got smart zombies, which is not always my favorite thing. But
they're closer to I Am Legend zombies.
Right.
They run around like people. They can think for themselves. They form a hive or a community.
Yeah, it's got a zombie tiger in it. I'm kind of on board. I don't expect to be wowed by it, and I'm probably going to cringe a lot while watching it, but I will watch Bautista take out zombies. I will do that.
Yeah, he's like a shorter cook with a cute little cap on in the beginning. He's hired to, with him, and I guess he's an ex-con, and they do heists, and there's a group of, like, what, 8 or 9 of them?
Oh, yeah. How did I even leave that out? It's also a heist movie, apparently.
It's a heist movie. So I can picture the first half being the heist, and then the second half being we're going to fight off zombies like it's a video game, basically, but it's dumb. And it's the one time where you want Zack Snyder to direct and write something when it's dumb and you don't want to pretend that there's anything serious or thought-provoking behind it. Zack Snyder is the person I would want to do my zombie movie.
I don't necessarily want him to do anything.
Okay. I mean,
that's if you had a choice. But of the movies of his that I've seen, his Dawn of the Dead remake was the one that I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, I like 300, but Dawn of the Dead was probably the best package of a movie that I've seen him do.
It was loud, loud, bloody, and dumb.
Yeah,
and I enjoyed it well enough. So I will absolutely give this a chance. If he wanted to make a 4-hour version of this movie, it'd be the one time I think he could get me to watch a 4-hour
movie.
Maybe
he helped kick off the current zombie craze with that movie, and maybe he helps close it because also Walking Dead is thankfully fucking ending after a billion years. And no one watching it anymore. So, thankfully, we can close this, like, 12, 13, 14-year chapter of zombies that started with, like, this Dawn of the Dead remake and, like, Shaun of the Dead. Like, we can just close this shit up and get rid of zombies for, like, a good 20 years. Like, how it should be. You don't need zombies all the fucking time. Sorry.
Okay.
We don't need fucking... Lincoln movie was vampires, not zombies. Now I want to see Lincoln fight zombies, though. Now I want to see that. That would have been a better movie than fighting vampires. I'll check it out. It's going to be on Netflix.
Yep.
It seems like movie theaters are going to come back and be a thing. Maybe this summer, maybe? If it's positive? I'm sorry, I don't want to get political and talk about COVID vaccinations, but I'm actually sort of bullish on the numbers and the availability, which is good news, knock on wood.
It looks like people are... initially, when the vaccine first started to get rolled out, it did not look like it was going particularly well. But now it seems like it's actually happening fairly fast.
Moderna pumped out a ton of them to help. And, I'm hoping within a few months, that we're not going to be back to normal. We'll be approaching getting back to normal. We're going to have the Olympics, too, which is going to be super nice to have the Olympics back, for sure. And another Olympics in 6 months. So yeah, I'm happier in general right now, Ian. It's good. We got something to look forward to.
There's some positivity going on. There's lights at the end of the tunnel.
Yay.
All right, let's transition into the real meat and potatoes.
All right, Ian, we spoke about the Castlevania Resurrection Dreamcast prototype that was found. That was, what, like 2 weeks ago or last week? I don't know. Time doesn't have any meaning anymore.
It does not.
And the person found it on a disc. And then they made a YouTube video showing it being played. It's like pre-alpha. It's almost like proof of concept there. It's an adventure game, action-adventure, similar to, like you said, like the ones that were on the N64. And
ones on the PS2 and Xbox as well. I forgot about those. We're similar.
So, now, though, what happened last week is that we missed it. It was put on eBay, the disc. Open auction to a game that we don't know was either backed up or dumped, which always raises the hairs in the back of our necks about when it comes to game preservation, because we've been down this road before with other people, even a self-proclaimed game preservationist that puts games on eBay that aren't dumped and preserved, and then bad things happen because we don't know what happened. And those games that self-proclaimed game preservation put on eBay, we don't have any
word. Oh, you mean Patrick Scott Patterson?
Yes. We don't know what happened to those games, and that's been years now. That's like 2 years ago, at least.
One hell of a preservationist.
We don't know what the plans are for those games. We don't know if they're backed up at this point. We have no clue for those games. So this is always the danger. So the auction goes up, and I saw it at $20,000, and then it was gone. According to this video we'll get into in a bit, it got to $25,000 before it was pulled off of eBay, not just ended by the seller. It seemed like something weird happened, was pulled. I can't find the eBay listing. I searched for it, I couldn't find it. So this YouTuber named Dongled, who's a big Castlevania fan, check out his video. We're getting news from him. He had the skinny on what happened here. So this is what happened. The composer of the game that was hired by Konami, Mark Lindsay, got in touch with Dongled. God, I wish I knew your real name, sir. I'm not comfortable calling you Dongled, but okay. So, the composer reached out to the person running this auction, who was going to profit a lot if these were real bids, and probably some were. Maybe not all of them were, but a lot here. And basically threatened him legally. Threatened the seller and said, listen, I own the music that's part of that demo or that version of the game on there. So I want you to take this down.
My understanding was watching the video, and I watched it right before this, was that basically he was like, he said it a little bit more broadly. He was like, you don't own what's on there, and mm-hmm. I can make some noise.
Sure, but it was a legal threat. It was a legal threat. And so the seller got skittish and took it down. There was a question and answer. I did see this before it was pulled, where someone asked, have you backed up this game? And the seller did say, to their credit, I have backed up the game.
Right.
I mean, that's as simple as ripping it off of the disc. It takes you like, 5-10 minutes to do that. So that's a positive. So now we don't know now where this stands and what's going to happen with this, or it's going to be released. I have not seen an update since then when it comes to this. So I'm of a mixed mind now when it comes to this. Because it's extremely shitty to put this up on eBay to sell it. But was it within the seller's right to do that? Yes. Legally, they could sell this. If this was not... if there was a sort of chain of custody that it was not stolen. If this was something that should have been returned to Konami at some point, and if Konami had... when I first saw it taken down, I thought, well, Konami
did it,
said
right?
that's ours. It was taken from us. We own that. If that's the case, then yeah, he couldn't sell that. He couldn't sell it because Konami would not only own the intellectual property, they would own the disc itself. Here's the thing. If this person acquired this disc legally, they own that disc legally. They don't own the IP on the disc, but they own the disc. They can do whatever the fuck they want with that disc. They can destroy it. They right. can trade it. They could sell it.
It would be like trying to... It would be like if I was trying to sell a copy of a video game and someone same was thing. Like, I worked on this. You can't sell it. It's like, no, this is my copy.
It's the same exact scenario. It doesn't matter if it's one of a kind, two of a kind, or a million of them. It's like sort of that first sale doctrine where I bought it. I can sell it to someone else or trade it or do whatever with it. So I am not comfortable. I'm glad that it was taken down. The auction, because we could have gotten a weird spot where you don't know who's bidding on it. And I talked about right before this I don't like how people basically hold these IPs for ransom that hasn't been reserved. So that's good, but I'm not comfortable with legal threats that should not be thrown at people to intimidate people. That I don't like. I don't like illegal threats that probably have no legal standing for them to occur. That I'm not comfortable with. So I feel weird about the whole situation.
Yeah, I do too. I don't think there's legal standing for it. On the other hand, I'm happy with the outcome it generated. I'm just not exactly happy with how they went about it. To the composer's credit, he wants it released for free. He wants it preserved and released out there. He doesn't want this person making money on it. I get it, but I don't think that legal threats was necessarily the way to go about that.
Yeah, and now that it's been revealed in this video, if you wanted to intimidate the guy not to release it, don't put out this video explaining the situation, how even the composer knew that, well, I really want this out for free. Because once you say that publicly, even if you try to sue, if I was a defense lawyer, I'd say, well, you're not concerned about the IP because you want it out for free. So
right.
What are you doing? So the whole situation is weird. It's like you're working against your own self-interest, revealing that information if that's the strategy you wanted to go with. So the whole thing is sort of muddy, and now what happens? Now you got someone that cage has been rattled that wanted to make some money. Like this is why I hate when they reveal. We talked about how I don't like when anyone reveals we paid money to get this. I don't think you negotiate with terrorists or reveal that sort of thing if you can. That's all, because this is what happens. Now we don't know if this is going to get released. This person might just clam up or try to sell it privately now. You know, they might find someone. They're going to have the people contact them who bid on it. I mean, there's probably some interaction there.
Yeah, we're kind of back to square one.
Once you get back to 20, once you get to 20 grand, you have serious buyers that will try to get in touch with you privately. They'll get your contact information, or if they had them already. So this is a lose-lose. I mean, no one wins in this scenario, unfortunately. It stinks. Yeah. Did I just ramble for like 5 minutes? What happened here?
It's fine.
Did I cover everything?
Yeah, you covered it all. I talked too. It was fine. We did it.
This was a Pat dominant segment.
We did
about Castlevania. When you probably know a hell of a lot more about the Castlevania series than me. But it was more of a. Pat Law.
I talked a little bit about the important aspect of where it stands in the Castlevania lineage last week when we talked.
Okay,
about
I'm not trying to do a whole audit of the segment, which we wear every segment we do. We're just going to talk about was there enough exchange interaction between
fine.
That?
It was good.
All right, so we'll see
what
it's
a fine segment.
It's a fine segment. We'll see what happens in the future. Go check out Dongled's video about it for this, and it seems like he has a lot of other Castlevania stuff, like retrospectives, that you can check out on his channel.
Yeah. Moving on. Nintendo says it will focus on more original game series in the future, in addition to its successful IPs. So, Nintendo is kind of on record in an interview with Japanese news agency Nikkei. Furukawa says that the company would commit to creating more original game franchises in the future and emphasize that the Switch firm would need to continue to innovate in order to maintain its relevance within the increasingly competitive home entertainment marketplace. With the expansion of time spent at home, the range of entertainment as an object of consumption is expanding, the president says. Competition is tough, and I am not optimistic.
Wow. Okay.
That is interesting. I wanted to bring that up immediately because I find that to be interesting coming from Nintendo. Nintendo doesn't ever really seem to talk about competition, really, or talk about their optimism. They kind of always exist.
They just say, "Oh, we make games
on their own.
We hold things close to the vest."
It's interesting to hear this from Nintendo right now, especially when they are just absolutely beating it up on the market with the Switch. I mean, they're doing insane sales with the Switch.
It has opened up a theme park. They're doing a Mario movie.
So I feel like optimism might be warranted.
Hey,
but I understand wanting to be cautious, and that's fine.
Well, I mean, you got the mobile market that was not as huge even 4 or 5 years ago. Even when the Switch came out 4 years ago, it wasn't nearly as big. It's blowing up, the mobile game market. You have two new consoles that just came out, even though there's not a huge amount of them, and there's not really a reason to own them really yet. So I can see him always wanting to be, okay, we got to make sure that we don't go the Wii U route and then lose all our gains.
Right, we can't succeed and then lose our edge. That could be a translation thing. But
studying
yeah.
various forms of entertainment. See, that's what's interesting, because like for so long, Nintendo was like, you know, we're not doing movies, we're not doing TV shows, and now we know there's going to be that one movie, but maybe you see a Netflix series or some sort of, you know, like they got all these IPs, they can try stuff, they can experiment.
Right,
you know, and they got the money to do that. Like, they could do like a Legend of Zelda, you know, like Amazon series, whatever. Like, they're doing the Lord of the Rings one. They can try to do this stuff. They can do like a Samus series, or they can.
Yeah, they can take. I think they're.
There are tons of production companies that would want to do it, and they can just license it out and have some creative input for it.
I think they are uniquely poised right now. I think this is the time. If they were going to experiment with movies and television, this would be
yes,
the time
because
there's
so many different avenues they can do it. And less risk for like a theatrical release. And plus, the other thing we talk about, you keep more of your money when you're not putting stuff in theaters. Like, if you can do like how Disney Plus is doing, it's like, well, people are buying our service, we're keeping all their subscription money, we're not sharing with the movie theaters, you know, when they're going to see the Avengers stuff. You know, obviously you want that money as well, but we're in a different spot even from the past couple of years.
So back to their properties, they don't release a whole lot of new properties, at least they haven't in recent years.
Where's my list of IPs?
Over the past 20 years, this is from the article, the company's most significant original IP launches were Splatoon 2015, Wii Sports 2006, and Pikmin 2001. They haven't done anything with Wii Sports since the Wii U. I don't even know that you could necessarily call that a franchise.
You could, but...
It's not really an IP. There's no, like, notable characters or anything in Wii Sports. So I think it just makes it harder to market it is something
they like only that. Have about 25 to 30 IPs, like technically when you look at the list, it's not a huge amount, not counting like the third party weird shit that they published. I'm talking about like first party stuff.
Yeah. Pikmin is popular but not insanely popular. Splatoon, on the other hand, has done fairly well. They have tried some other things that haven't worked as well. They've tried ARMS, which honestly, as much as I enjoyed it, it was a fairly bare-bones game, and I don't think it went very far. They've really tried to push the competitive aspect of it, but I don't think that really worked for them. I do think new IPs are important for Nintendo. I think... having something successful that you want, I think you want more properties for people to look forward to. That way, when you don't bring back certain older properties, you're still keeping things fresh. At the same time, yes, new IPs are good, but you have people out there who want new F-Zeros. You have people out there who want new Advance Wars games. They have IPs that they're just... you have people who would love to see the 3DS Kid Icarus game get a port on the Switch with real fucking controls instead of having to hold it with one hand and aim shit with the stylus.
It's been 20 years since a Wave Race game. Like,
yeah.
Let's do a Wave Race. That would sell. It won't be Animal Crossing, but there are people that are like, oh, this is a cool game. This is like a cool, fun racing game.
I need to stress, I really do want them to take some risks and make some new IPs, but you have all of these old IPs that you haven't done anything with that people would be really happy to see again, that is less risk on your part.
Yeah, Advance
Bring back an old IP and do a new IP, that's fine, but don't...
There's nothing else on the system that Nintendo does that's like Advance Wars, like a strategy game. Like, put that out.
Yeah.
It's been so long, and it'll be fresh, and people are like, oh, I like this. There's nothing on the Switch I know of that's like, especially with Nintendo's first party... you know, polish or second party polish that they can do with that. Like, there's stuff here.
I think,
God, if they announce an Earthbound game, forget it. The internet would end.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they should do all these at one time, but there's enough stuff here where you don't necessarily have to go and try to create all this new stuff. It's been so long.
You don't have
since we've had some of these.
I get it. You want to do stuff that's not
Punch
Mario
out.
And Zelda. Sure. But you have tons of great IPs. Nintendo doesn't need new IPs as much as it needs to learn how to manage the ones they already have.
I think 12 years between Punch-Out games is sufficient. You can put out a new Punch-Out game.
Yeah.
12 years it's been. 2009.
Put out a new Punch-Out, put out a new F-Zero, and then
Advance
dabble
Wars,
in. Put out an
Advance F-Zero,
Wars,
Wave Race.
And then dabble in a new IP, but don't... Talking about how you need to find new IPs without addressing the old ones, I think it's just going to make fans more leery of whether or not they're ever going to see anything from any of these old series ever again.
Yeah. There's a billion Pokemon games, which I guess is a different company technically, but like... There's other people out there that aren't as, we'll just say, as expressive on social media and Twitter that might be like, oh my God, I haven't played F-Zero in forever. No, that was still there. I have a Switch. I'll buy F-Zero.
Yeah.
We've said that every week. I'll buy an F-Zero game.
This line is also a little... this makes me a little nervous. Speaking in a previous Nikkei interview published in February, the exec said that any successor to the Nintendo Switch must be able to offer consumers new forms of entertainment. No, not necessarily. When you strike on something that works, you don't always have to abandon that for something new.
I don't need to watch streaming services on my Switch. I don't need that. I don't necessarily need
new
that.
New forms of entertainment. No, my fear is that means that must have motion controls or it must have a tablet.
Well, it has motion controls.
You fucking nailed it with the Switch.
Yeah.
You did. You nailed it with the Switch. And I understand the need to innovate, but... Nintendo, some of the biggest pushback against Nintendo comes when they insist people need to use these new methods that they come up with.
Yeah.
And I don't like it.
Thank God they didn't lead into the 3D shit, because that's never took off, and it mostly was a fad.
Sony leaned into it too. I mean, they had a fucking branded PlayStation 3D TV that you could buy. I'm so glad that went nowhere.
But then even with the VR, it's like, I'm glad Nintendo was like, okay, we don't need to go there. Let's just stick with our bread and butter. We tried 3D with the 3DS, and no one really used the 3D with the 3DS. And we probably destroyed some 6-year-old eyes with that, allegedly. But I mean, like, we're just going to keep what we know.
But a lot of their best stuff doesn't use the gimmicks. Yes, Wii Sports did, but like some of the biggest games on the Wii, New Super Mario Bros. Deluxe, or I think it was just New Super Mario Brothers at that time, Mario Kart, Smash Brothers, all of their bread and butter series that did not shoehorn in motion controls. It's never the gimmick that gets people to stay with a Nintendo console.
No, and ARMS, speaking of ARMS, that was the thing with using, you can punch with the Joy-Con stuff. And
you can play with the normal controls, but you don't get the same precision you do with the motion controls. And that's why I never picked up on ARMS, was because I didn't want to use the motion controls, but I felt like I wasn't utilizing all of the capabilities of the game using the actual controls.
Sure.
So I bounced off of ARMS. Stop it, Nintendo. You have creative ideas. There are things that are like good, but you don't need... It's like candy. One piece is good. Two pieces is even better. 10 pieces is overkill, and I'm sick of it. Like, I don't... Stop. You don't need to offer me a new form of entertainment. I really like the form of entertainment you've given me with the Switch.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that the Switch is very clever in the fact that it's a handheld and a console, it's done the least in terms of weird shit of recent Nintendo consoles. When you're holding a Switch or you're playing it on a TV, it's just a fucking video game console. Just a video game.
When you look at the stuff that Nintendo has, God, 1080 is technically Nintendo.
Yeah, it is.
That's right.
That's right. They did a GameCube one.
No, that was, the N64 one was developed by Nintendo.
Yeah, they did it. I'm just saying, I didn't think they...
That was like in their line of, we did Wave Race, we'll do 1080. It didn't do as well, but... So when you look at the list of Nintendo IPs... I don't count ARMS as a real fighting game, but they have Smash Brothers. They have every genre covered for the most part. Like, even, like, I'm looking at this list, like, I mean, technically, Sin and Punishment was all published by Nintendo. I mean, if you wanted to say that, like,
Sin and Punishment's treasure, but I think it's still one of those things that it's Nintendo. Yeah, it's Nintendo.
They're related to it.
That's
what I mean. Like, so, like, even if Nintendo went to treasure, if they're around, hey, we want to do another Sin and Punishment, we want to do another cool rail shooter. And they'd be like, okay, Nintendo has almost every genre covered. When you look at this list, Advance Wars, they have strategy. They have all these multiple racing games.
I mean, they have Fire Emblem. That's the problem. Fire Emblem took over Advance Wars.
Oh, yeah, fuck
it's made by the same people.
Come on, man. Come on. Let me get cool future tanks and shit. I don't want just guys with big swords. Anyway, so they have all these genres covered. Punch-Out is a sports boxing game even. So you got all this stuff going on. You just have to do it more regularly. I think that's the thing. You have to do it more regularly. And we're not even counting all the Mario at the Olympics and Mario Golf. And, you know, like, that's all covered. The sports stuff is, for the most part, covered. Cutesy Nintendo stuff. They just got to do it. Yeah, so I'm kind of in agreement. I think there's enough IPs to play with. You just have to go back to them.
Yeah.
I mean, what genre did we miss that Nintendo doesn't have covered? Action-adventure, they got that. It was Samus and Zelda stuff.
They even had first-person shooter covered with Metroid Prime.
You want a first-person shooter? Nintendo do a first-person shooter, like a modern one, and come up with their own IP? You got Splatoon, that sort of scratches the itch for, you know, for a shooter, right? Like that's the Nintendo-style shooter. They're not going to do like a Blood and Gore one, would they? You know?
Probably not.
So you're pretty much covered. So there you go, Nintendo. Just use what you got and come out with them more than once every like 10, 15 years, and I think you're good. I mean, we're gonna come out with a new Star Fox probably on the Switch. Probably gonna do that. You're gonna have a new Metroid. Give us something else. Well, give us one of these C tier ones we talk about, like Advance Wars or Wave Race or F-Zero. I don't even think F-Zero is C tier. It's just that you haven't used it in so long.
No. Right. F-Zero was really popular for a while there. I mean, there was two Game Boy Advance
cartoon
games,
in Japan.
A cartoon, the Game Boy, or the GameCube game, and then the Super Nintendo game and the N64 game that got one of the few games that got anything on the disc drive. It got the expansion pack in Track Creator. So it's not like F-Zero didn't have...
I don't know if Nintendo thinks we can't have two of the same genre at the same time with Mario Kart. There's different audiences for Mario Kart and F-Zero.
F-Zero and Mario Kart play very differently.
F-Zero is closer to a more traditional
racing
game.
But that's always
game.
What I've thought, too. I've always... Is that really Nintendo's thing? Well, we can't do two racing games because it's going to impinge?
No, it's not.
F-Zero is different.
No, it's totally different.
Racing is an entire genre with many different types of games.
Wave Race and F-Zero and Mario Kart are three entirely different games, just sharing the same genre. Wave Race is amazing to go back to and play.
I'm glad you enjoyed Wave Race, because I was talking it up a bit, and I haven't played it in a while, but I was talking it up when you were getting ready to review it for the book, and I'm like, no, I remember it being a really fun game, and you enjoyed the heck
it's
out of it.
It's better than I remembered it.
Yeah, it's a good game.
It's technically... one of the most impressive games I think that could have came out at like more the beginning of a system cycle that really used what the system could do. The transparency of the water, the physics of the water is incredible that they figured that out. It's randomized. You know, like it's random how the ebbs and flows.
Yeah, riding the waves actually feels fun. Like it's very unique and interesting.
Sorry, this is going to come in at Wave Race retrospective, but well, is it 25th anniversary this year? When did Wave Race come out?
Good question. It's got to be getting close. We might have missed it.
I mean, I should know. I just did the review a few weeks ago. Oh, yeah. It's coming up in September. All right. There you go.
Cool.
All right.
We'll make sure
on.
To do a whole episode on Wave Race.
Yeah, so we're going
to
do 20 minutes on Wave Race.
The Game Boy game, the N64 game, and the GameCube game that no one talks about.
Yeah, I never played the GameCube one. Like, I own it.
Game Boy one's fun. I mean, it's simple.
That was the original one, technically.
Yeah, it was.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. The flowers are blooming. The grass is growing, and it's time to chop those weeds. Thanks to our sponsor, Manscaped. You can trim your manhood safely and efficiently. Manscaped, the global leaders in men's below-the-waist grooming, have an exclusive offer for our audience. Use code CUPODCAST to get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. Join the other 2 million men who trust Manscaped. They are here to make sure you are trimmed and smelling nice. After all, it's time for some spring cleaning.
That's right, Pat. Spring has sprung, and Manscaped has the best tools to get you ready. Manscaped are the global leaders in men's below-the-waist grooming and have forever changed the grooming game with their amazing products. Have you heard of their Weed Whacker? This nose and ear hair trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in all your delicate areas. No more gross nose hairs flying in the wind.
Oof.
Ew, gross. Speaking of incredible hygiene, Manscaped has formulations to keep you fresh and ready for everything that comes your way all day. The Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing deodorant and moisturizer. It's starting to get hot out there, and this is extremely crucial. You'll also find the Crop Reviver Spray-On Toner, which will keep you smelling fresh down there, just like spring flowers. Speaking of smelling fresh, complete your grooming game this spring with the new Refined Cologne Signature scent by Manscaped. Stuff's legit. It'll have you smelling like royalty.
Smell good and feel good this spring. Get 20% off and free shipping with code CUPODCAST at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping using code CUPODCAST at manscaped.com. Do yourself a favor and use the right tools for the job. Your balls will thank you. Right. Ian, we've been talking about NFTs, non-fungible tokens, which means they cannot be replaced.
They cannot be funged.
It cannot be fudged. It's based on blockchain technology that stamps digitally your token, which could be a picture or a video for the most part. You own that. You own that. You're the only person that can own it. Other people can have that media, that picture, the video, but you actually are the owner.
The other thing I would point out is it's non-fungible because it cannot be exchanged. It's like when a record like a record gets a numbered release. Mm-hmm. If I have a dollar and you have a dollar and we swap dollars, we technically end up in the same place. If I have one of 100 and you have three of 100, well, technically it's the same item, but we do have different instances of it.
And we'll get into that. They have numbered tokens, basically. Like we talk about the NBA.
Many NFTs are not released as a one-off. They're released as editions, meaning you get one of 100, two of 100, three of 100, etc.
So we talked about this with the NBA NFT. Again, they were the first one that blew this up. Top Shot. Where you basically buy packs of digital cards and you open them and you get your little 5-second, pass clip or Curry hitting a three or someone dunking or blocked. And there's marketplaces for these. We're just going to go over this again for you because this has really blown up the past even 3 months and it's already going to probably burn out.
My understanding of it is constantly evolving too. So if I get something wrong, I'm sorry.
Before we get to this, but in the past few weeks, we have Tom Brady has an NFT company now. They've sold Gronk rookie cards for $1 million. I mean, or NFT cards. We'll just say that. WWE just did Undertaker once for WrestleMania, where they were going for $10,000 or $30,000 or $50,000 or $100,000.
Insane.
Tops is now doing
baseball
cards, which is basically what Top Shot is. They're basically basketball cards, but they're videos. So we're getting to the point where now it's just becoming like any other collectible, where it's becoming highly speculative. And when you say people are collecting these, I might believe you if I see it, but this is mostly how with baseball cards got in the 90s. This is speculation. This is, I'm going to get rich off this stuff eventually. And yeah, some people collect baseball cards, but the bubbles came because you can get rich quick, basically getting this stuff. So retro gaming is now there with it I was looking up retro gaming NFTs to see if someone created one. If I wanted to, anyone can create this. I can go create an NFT NWC gold card if I wanted to and auction it off. I could. I can go do it, make it one of a kind, and put up for auction, and you can get crazy people to bid on it. Maybe I'll do it as an experiment. Here's the point. Atari, who previously wanted to do cryptocurrency, their hotel, they tried to do the watch thing, and they came out with a console that's already no one talking about because there's no reason for it to exist besides slapping a penis on it. We are now here. The NFTs come at the perfect time for Atari to whore themselves out for something else, and now this is a market where they actually can make money on versus a hotel with Atari NFTs.
I have to give modern Atari credit for one thing, and that is not letting a single trend pass them by without slapping Atari on it
and
somehow.
Having zero shame to try whatever we want. Speaker hats. Yeah. We'll just license this out to anyone. Obviously, the Denny's thing was a huge success with Hasteroids, so we give them credit for that.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, it's a licensing company, Atari. The owner is out of France. It's a licensing company. That's what it's become, which is fine. They bought it legally. They got it. They were done with it. Was it who owned it before? Was it Epic had it last? Who had it before them? I forget. But so this is what they're trying to do. They launched Atari nostalgic NFT collectibles for Pong and Centipede.
Yep. I actually saw that because I follow Donna Bailey on Twitter, and she was retweeting some of it, which was...
Oh, she's on Twitter? Donna Bailey? I was just thinking about her the other day. Yes. What happened to Donna Bailey?
She's on Twitter. I follow her. Which seemed a little odd for me, I'll admit, because it seems like everyone is anti-NFT until they get an opportunity to somehow make crazy money on an NFT, which, I mean, whatever. Hey, make your money.
Hey, I'm 3 seconds away from doing a fucking past collection line and seeing if people start trying it. So it's called the Atari Capsule Collection. That's what it's called. There's a website set up for it, and the website is actually pretty cute. It does the little there's Donna right there.
Yep.
It's always one N. I always forget that.
Yeah.
Donna with one N. And there's a little cute little little Atari little timeline here. And it goes up. It basically goes to 82 because that's when Atari's relevance basically ended. was about 82. We'll just say.
That's true.
If you want to talk about the links a little bit, but I'm talking about in general, that's when it ended in terms of we own this market. So you can buy, let's see, Centipede, only one available. So here's one that's only, you can buy it on view on Block Party. So Block Party, I guess, is this marketplace for all these NFTs. There's like three or four of these that popped up. Please don't tell me that I created it. Oh, the auction closed. The Atari Capsule Collection of Senate Feed went for $12,250.
Important to note, the NFT also came with an arcade cabinet.
Oh, okay. All right, an original one or one that was mocked up?
It was an original. So it's an arcade. It comes with an actual arcade cabinet that has
original. Okay,
an original arcade cabinet that has a new. I think they said like augmented reality overlay or something, one of a kind, so that you can point like your phone at it, and I don't know.
Okay,
it comes off of it. So this is interesting.
So it's not. It's a little slight than batshit crazy. It's still crazy,
right? This is the weird thing though, because I would totally expect Atari to just make a bunch of digital cartridges, which they did, and send them out and sell them as NFTs. But even Atari is like, okay, if we want to get some money for this, we've got to give someone something tangible. At that point, auctioning off, I think it was a signed, you know, Centipede cabinet, you're getting something with it besides...
Oh, no, it's digitally signed, the NFT. Donna didn't sign the cabinet.
Okay.
This is just a Centipede cabinet goes for like $1,000.
Right.
So, I mean, like,
but
that's...
But it's still something. Like,
it's something.
It's something besides just the item. I think they realized they needed to sweeten the pot somehow.
You don't have to. That's the whole point. Like, you don't have to sweeten
apparently
the pot.
Not.
People are fucking crazy with this stuff.
Yeah.
This is crazy it went for this much.
Oh, yeah. Wild.
It's what is it? It's just a spinning arcade cabinet. Digital spinning arcade cabinet. That's what it is.
Literally all it is.
So, then they have... That's the one-of-a-kind one, though. So, that's where it's like you're banking on... someone being crazier than you that wants a one-of-a-kind NFT, even though now there's a billion one-of-a-kind NFTs that are out there, including what originally started for was actually artwork.
Right.
That's where it actually makes sense. Okay, then they have stuff like the Kid Pixel Retro Pixel art on Block Party. They're all sold out before I even click on it. And what do these go for here? Let's see. Oh, like the Pong one, the one-of-a-kind Pong one didn't get the respect. It only got 75, well, it only went for 7,500 only. Which is interesting because a Pong machine is a lot harder to find. Did I come with a Pong machine, the Atari, the Pong one? Let's see. Did the Pong one come with it? No. They couldn't find a Pong machine.
No?
No, it doesn't seem like you get a Pong machine with that. It's just a 3D digital signature by Alcorn, who worked on it.
Yeah. So, interestingly, it shows what the NFT is worth without anything else, what the NFT is worth with something else.
Well, Centipede's more popular than Pong.
Sure, that is true.
You know, but, these are like little digital videos, like here's Pong being played. This one's still available. 10 available. It's the rendition Kid Pixel Pong Retro Pixel Art. So, Kid Pixel, I guess, is the artist who, it's a little Pong, little pals go back and forth. It's a little quick little video. And that's going for, let's see. Oh, my God, there's more than I thought. There's little images of a little GIF of all the different creatures with their scores and what they get you. Those are $150. Those are going for that. There's a little design of a wooden little, it's like 3D thing of a Pong cabinet. That went for $2,500. And then here you go, Ian. This is what I'm going to get into this craziness. Gold Centipede cartridges.
Yeah.
Representations of gold Centipede cartridges.
That's what I saw.
Not even the original one. They're gold.
That's where it completely fell off. I was like, all right, what is this shit?
They sold.
Yeah.
There's one that went for $1,050, $1,051, $1,050, $1,300, and $1,001. So they did, what's that, five of them they sold. A Pong quarter sold for $751. It's in a little like case, like a fake case, if you actually owned one.
Mm-hmm.
Again, these are not real items you are receiving.
Mm-hmm.
These are not like that. We made five gold Centipede cartridges,
nope.
And we're going to mail them to you.
No, nope. You're getting a picture of a gold Centipede.
You're getting a
cartridge.
Picture of it that I can also view right now. I can view what you own. Again, I for those that understand this NFT thing, that's what makes it so wild to people. It's like, well, you own that digital item, but not even the intellectual property featured in that item that you own. It's weird. It's a brave new world when it comes to this stuff. So I guess the next conversation is, this is accelerating far quicker than I thought. I thought, okay, this is going to ramp up by later in the year. I said, you're definitely going to have baseball cards and other cards, and that's already happened with Topps announcing it. That makes sense, because that's basically what happens. You open up packs of cards for some of these things. You're basically gambling at that point to get that chase card. That's what happens with Top Shot. Will we see like Disney get into this? Will we see Nintendo get into this? And everyone else that says, you know what? We can make some money who cares that, you know, you're helping destroy the planet by using all this extra fucking energy to create this blockchain technology to do this? That's basically what's happening.
Right.
Crypto uses so much energy. It's nuts. It's unreal.
Yes. They constantly talk of energy efficient ways of doing it, but they've, from what I understand, that's been talked about for years and years and years without it ever actually getting there.
No. But I don't want
to
get political.
It's the kind of soothe people.
Yeah, I don't want to get political.
Oh, yeah, don't ever have an opinion on your podcast.
That has nothing to do with politics. But anyway.
Fucking take a hike.
But anyway, so we're going to see other companies do this. I just wonder, because if there's money to be made, they're going to do it. It's whether or not Disney's going to be like, well, because you can't sell these to kids. That's the thing. You need a credit card to go online to buy these from marketplaces. So it's like, you can't be like, will a kid be like, hey, I want the Mickey Mouse NFT where Disney makes, you know, 5,000 of them, sell them for like, you know, $5 each or whatever. I'm just thinking out loud. I don't know if that's going to catch on the kids, because again, you can't do anything with these. You can't do anything with these. I got into not an argument, but I talked to someone who was like, well, what makes this different from collecting a physical item? You can usually do something with the physical item. If it's a video game that had an application, plus that wasn't created literally yesterday. The video game was created 35 years ago, and there's a use to that. Even now, I can put it in and play it. I can do something with it. It was created for a specific purpose.
You know, it'd be wild if digital picture frames made a comeback.
I heard they were. No.
Oh, okay.
For the one-of-a-kind art piece, what better way to display that you own that one-of-a-kind art piece with digital picture frames? Those started to blow up in the late 2000s, early 2010s. My friend...
I feel like it was even earlier than that, but yeah.
But that's when they became commercially viable. My friend used to make them before they were a real commercial product. He used to make them. He'd buy his own little mini LCDs and make it from scratch and sell them.
Yeah,
I said to him a few months ago, hey, if you actually invested at the time, you could have been a company that made those, like for real. Like you were ahead of the curve knowing this would be a thing. But I've heard they've made a minor comeback because of that. Now, I mean... they're never going to blow up, because I don't think NFTs are going to catch on with like everyone. Because I think at some point you have people that be like me, like, I don't buy into the concept. I don't buy into it, even as a potential to flip it. I just don't buy into the concept. I buy into the concept to flip crypto or doggy coin or whatever. I see that as something even beyond the NFT.
With NFT, you reject the premise entirely.
I reject the premise entirely when it's NFT.
Yeah.
I sort of reject the premise, even though someone will say, well, Pat, it's just collectible, it's digital. What's the difference between that and the physical?
The fact that I can right-click your image and have it.
Yes. You can't right-click my Wally Bear the No Kids cartridge and
create another copy of it.
You can't do that. That's where you
lose. I can't double-tap a person's baseball card and now have my own baseball card.
Yes, correct, Ian. There's nothing more unique about owning it. That's the thing. There's nothing unique about owning something digitally versus owning something physically. That's where it comes down to. Oh, I'm not even talking about creating artificial scarcity. That's all the conversation. How these are all artificial scarcity markets created. All of them. They are defining at the time. These are all chase cards now where it's like, wait, we're going to make 100 of them. Why are they worth that much, Ian? Well, dumb Pat, because we only made 100 of them.
Because I said so.
And people think that there's only 100, that they're rare. They're hologram baseball cards or hologram, you know, like, but in digital form. But they're all like that. So now we're getting off topic. I wanted to tell you how crazy this has gotten so quickly, where because this has gotten crazy so quickly, this will probably bottom out quicker than you thought. Yes. That's why I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think so. I think if we were talking about it a little bit on the phone last night. Everything, especially now.
We don't talk on the phone, you know, we talk about it.
Rarely.
We come on the podcast and we just go and that's it. That's our podcast.
It's actually kind of how John and I do our podcast. Huh. Pandemic time has accelerated everything. The rise and fall, the popularity of things has come and gone. Remember when everyone was baking bread? That seems like it was a fucking decade ago. It was a year ago. It was less than
a year
ago. There
was bread baking going on?
Yeah. Remember Bean Dad? Bean Dad was a short 3 months ago. But Bean Dad seems like Bean Dad was 25 years ago. And at the time,
I almost forgot what Bean Dad was.
At the time, we thought Bean Dad was going to be the biggest shit. It was going to be around forever. We are so bored. We are so fucking bored and lonely that we are just churning through news and fads at an accelerated rate. And I think that's actually
that's
going...
That's what this is.
I think that this is going to excel. We're all at home. Artists are sitting behind computers. People are like, I can mint this for $100 and sell it for profit. I'm going to try. Because we're all bored and doing nothing. So I think this is really going to accelerate it right into the fucking ground by Christmas.
Because at some point you realize, oh my God, I spent how much money on these NFTs? I'm doing what with this money? And either then you try to say, well, let me see if I can try to sell it. You may not have a buyer months down the road.
Sure.
You may not have a buyer that's going to spend, well, not even for the $12,000 for the centipede one, which you won't get the cool cabinet there. But I mean, like, are you going to find someone that's going to be like, I'm going to buy this gold centipede CG image for $1,300? You're going to find, like, you that's what you're betting on. You're going to find someone. I mean, unless Pat, you're crazy. People are actually collecting these and putting them on their hard drive and going and having a viewing room, and they're clicking, oh, with their arrow. Oh, there's my NFT. I own that one. I own that Undertaker $30,000 little thing of him, like, you know, exploding something in the air with lightning. Like, I'm just not buying it. I'm not buying that this is actually a collectible market. This is 100% speculation.
Yep.
Unless you know someone that's into collecting digital goodies as a thing. Like,
I've seen some people do it and compare it to buying skins for, like, a game. And I think there are marketplaces out there, without looking into it, I think there are marketplaces out there now that are doing it where it's cheaper. People aren't exactly trying to get money, and they look at it as a weird, fun thing. But I honestly think anyone who's trying to invest in it is crazy, because that's the thing with this, like, gold Atari cartridge. $1,300. You're buying that. You're paying $1,300. You're acknowledging that it's having a moment right now and it's going for a stupid amount of money. Now you have to imagine that there's going to be a time in the future where this is worth more than $1,300. And I can't do that.
And here's the other problem.
I feel like this stuff is all going to get its highest purchases right now when it's a hot fad.
And here's the other thing that with these NFTs is that you have to people have to be aware of this stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like with baseball cards and comic books, you had shops, you had publications to sort of pump up the market. Remember Beckett for all the different, like Beckett for hockey cards and baseball cards. With the NFTs, you have to bring awareness that these are important enough for to get other people for that specific NFT. So you're going to have your Top Shot audience. You're going to have your Atari ones. You're going to have whatever if Nintendo does them. It's so all these different realms. It almost, to me, sounds like Pogs in a way, where you have the main category, but then you probably have people that are only interested in, like, I don't know, the Pogs that are, like, the Tick, or the Pogs that are Marvel, if they had, I have no idea. That's how it seems like it's to me. But hey, you can own Pogs and actually use them to play the Pog game.
Right.
So I'm not trying to put Pogs down, but the Pogs had their moment. Pogs had their 1 or 2 year moment in, like, was it the late 90s? They had their, was it mid to late 96?
I'd say 96, 97. Probably the ideal year there, yeah.
When you had Pogs that got big, and guess what happened to that market, Ian? Are there $1 million Pogs that I'm not aware of?
I don't believe so, no.
So that's all. So this isn't even like, I'm not even down in Atari, because at this point they'll do whatever to make their money. It's not even discouraging. This could be one of the best things they've done.
No,
out of all their ideas.
If Freddie Chesney was not out there doing fucking NFTs, I'd be concerned about his well-being right now. I'd be like, has anyone seen Fred?
And you know what? This didn't take 3.5 years to come out, like the VCS. They got this out immediately.
There's a weird trend happening that he needs to jump on.
Do we need to manufacture anything? Oh, no. We can just get someone to make an image and click a few buttons and make a fucking blockchain, a digital signature on these images and videos, and you're done. That's what's amazing about this. Anyone can do this. There's no entry. There's nothing you have to pay to get into this, really. It's just, well, get your piece and go. It's like I said, brave new world, brave new world. But now I'm thinking about doing it. I'm thinking about Pat's line of games.
I've seen lots of people go from "I will not do NFTs" to doing lots of NFTs.
We can blockchain
very quick.
We can blockchain Ian face reactions. We could do that. You can own Ian's facial reaction about different topics we've done, different laughs, different consternation, yelling at Patrick for Light and Double Dragon. We can do a whole line of these, and now I want to do it.
It's the idea of creating collectibles is fun. What would you make? Yes. But the method by which it happens is not great.
Well, it's the end result. It's like, yeah, I would love to make my own, like, say, I always want to do, like, my own action figure line. I want people to own the action figure, though. Not like, let's make an image of an action figure and sell it, a 3D image. That's, like, not...
Yeah, now I'm just more interested in the idea of making actual CU podcast trading cards so that people can open packs, send them out.
Why can't we do that? Like, moments from the CU podcast.
We absolutely can.
We can do, like, personality profiles. We can do the checklist.
We're going to disrupt the NFT market with NFTs you can hold. We're going to reinvent trading cards.
We can do, like, a 64 card
Set?
We could. Not a big one. Oh, shit. Someone's going to... Yeah, okay. All right, we'll get back to that.
We'll get back to that.
Ian has an idea like that ever. Where we can like monetize like something like that. So that actually makes sense. And we do the hologram cards.
Yeah, you can do the hologram cards.
We can do the Pat and Ian shirtless combo hologram card. Oh, all right, Ian, we have a Patreon poll.
Patreon.com/CU Podcast. You go, you commit funds.
you commit fungible funds.
You commit funds. You get the full video podcast that way. We do hangouts. I got to do a hangout this weekend. I'm going to do a hangout this weekend, this Sunday.
You got to do a writing, too.
This Sunday. Got to do a writing. It's about that time. Last week, I did some Tiny Tales from the Game Stores. Go check that out. And we do a poll topic that you vote on. This week, Patrick, what do we got?
In second place, would a monetary or other indicator cause you to sell your game collection? 39%. And in first place, the big winner. Do big video game releases get too much hype?
Yes, they do.
End of topic.
This is actually coming off of an interesting article that is now a few months old.
It's about how long we wanted to talk about this topic.
Yeah, that was put out on Nintendo Life by Mitch Vogel, called Soapbox. The modern games industry has a hype problem and it needs to stop. And in it, he starts talking about Bayonetta 3 and how people, you know, excitedly want footage of it. He talks about Cyberpunk. I think, obviously, Cyberpunk is one of the... probably biggest examples of overhype in recent years.
Sure.
But all games, you know, fall victim to this, I think, at this point. Last of Us 2, you know, falls victim to it every year. The Call of Duty games get a hype cycle. Star Wars games get hype cycles. Everything gets these huge hype cycles. And he talks about it in his personal experience with it involves the Yoshi's games. The Yoshi games, the recent ones. How on the Wii U, he really liked Yoshi's Woolly World. I did as well. I thought it was a great game. A little easy, but very, very pretty and fun. Mm-hmm. And he talks about how hyped up he got for Yoshi's Crafted World on the Switch and how it was a big letdown for him. And how there were certain problems with it that definitely affected it. You know, he said there was too much, you know, hunting and pecking, basically collecting and stuff like that. But the big problem was he realized he had turned it into a game in his head that it could never possibly have been on release. And this has been happening more and more in the games industry. And I don't think there's really any... benefit to it. I think we're starting to see the end of the benefit to these sorts of hype cycles.
To the consumer.
Yes, we're starting to see the end of the benefit. It used to be that this would get people pumped out and you'd get people pre-ordering games and you'd get people all out so they could get a game on the night of release. But I think now with digital and the fact that you can get a game from your couch, you no longer need to pre-order. The hype cycle... there is no need to necessarily rush out and get the game right away. You'll always be able to get a copy. So I think people have started to calm down a little bit and wait after a game is released to see what happens. And it's been ending in disappointment time after time, as it did with Cyberpunk. These companies are showing gameplay footage such as like the... you know, the cinematic trailers. I hate cinematic trailers that are basically just cutscene that are supposed to give you an idea of a game, but don't actually show you.
There's no gameplay.
Gameplay.
I mean, it's a cliche, but there's no gameplay. So what are you showing me?
And I think about it when we go back to Cyberpunk, how I have really, in my head, I had an idea of how the game was going to play based on what they described, but they don't focus on any of that stuff. You don't see the gameplay. You don't have... your expectations are not realistic in any way, shape, or form, and it's hard to have a realistic expectation when the developers are going out of their way to not show you what they're working on. And I think it's a two-way street, though. we become attached to these games so early on. How many people were Cyberpunk fans doing Cyberpunk cosplay, putting Cyberpunk art up, making Cyberpunk icons for their fucking, you know, their Twitter feed without knowing anything about the game? People are buying into these games whole hog before they even come out, to the point where when they come out, you have people who are so bought into it with this hype cycle that they have to defend it because they've put so much of themselves into this game. And it's ridiculous. It's not good. We need to go back to looking at a game, looking at a preview.
It's like the game's dev and publishers basically get free marketing by overhyping it earlier, hyping it, and then you have all these people that are keeping it in the consciousness and doing all these things, like you said, for the benefit not of themselves but for the publisher,
right? And in a era where money is the most important with these sales, I hate to say it, developers might not think this way, but publishers are going to look at it and be like, these problems with the game don't matter. Look at the market we already have for it.
Sure.
It's going to sell anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Cyberpunk made money.
Yeah.
But was it worth it? I don't know. So, yes, there's definitely, I think it's an obvious question. There is a hype problem, but I do think it's partially the devs, but it also falls on us. We have to stop being these consumers that buy into the idea of a game or like a piece of concept art and decide that we're going to make this our banner for the next two fucking years.
But that's a whole other conversation. I don't know if it's more sociological. I'm not the type of person that will buy into a new console or a new game and spend years of my life following it.
No, I am the exact opposite.
I just don't have time.
If that's a game looks interesting to me, I go on, like, from the earliest previews, if a game looks interesting to me, I go on Media Blackout because I just want to experience it fresh.
So I had no idea, according to this. I'll get into the Game Awards themselves and how, I mean, at this point, obviously, Game Awards, it's a marketing campaign, that the show, we know that. They're the ones who buy the fucking airtime or whatever. I had no idea Bayonetta 3 was announced that long ago and isn't out yet. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
3.5 years ago and it's still not out yet? I had no idea. None. There's no reason to have a game announced that early before it comes out. We talked about the Metroid Prime 4 thing, how embarrassing that was for Nintendo. Nintendo did not have to do that, even that little in-development thing. That benefited nobody to have that. Then embarrassingly have to admit we junked the whole game and started over.
I think
that benefits no one.
It benefits no one, and Nintendo has been pretty good about that lately. It made me think that was kind of early on in the Switch.
That was hubris.
But it was also before they had a huge library of titles already out and under their belt, and I think they wanted something to kind of entice people who were holding on. I'm not saying it's good, but Nintendo doesn't normally do that. They usually do the, hey, look at this game, it's out in 3 months.
Sure.
At least they've been doing that with the Switch. And I think Metroid taught
obviously,
them a lot.
Obviously, companies do this for awareness because there's so many games being made. But it's also, for like Ian said, it's for pre-orders. You're guaranteed with that hype to get a certain number of pre-orders because people have been waiting on fucking a game like Cyberpunk now for like 3, 4, 5 years. I'm putting out my pre-order. This game's going to be great. It's going to be GTA, but in the future with Keanu and all this stuff. And Keanu will come out to the Game Awards and say hi. Keanu has nothing to do with the quality of the game. We all love Keanu. Him being paid by CG Projekt Red to come out and say hello real quickly, that doesn't mean the game's going to be any better or worse.
I'm sure Keanu is actually a good person from the things I've read.
Yeah,
but Keanu isn't on stage telling you about Cyberpunk because he thinks it's a great opportunity that you just got to hear about. No, he got a check for it.
Keanu did his motion capture and his acting probably like whatever in like a few days, 5, 6 days or whatever. Did his voiceover. He has no idea that the game coming out is going to be a piece of shit. No idea. He probably saw the news. It's probably, you know, it's bummer, man.
Yeah.
He probably was bummed by that because he thought this would be a cool project. He's presented the best case. So when I saw that happen at the Game Awards, the past one, that was at the first two ago? A year, was that 2019? That was pre-COVID because he was there in person. That was pre-COVID.
That wasn't Game Awards. That was E3 when he came out.
Okay.
Whatever. Or maybe he did Game Awards too. E3 was the You're Fabulous thing. Whatever.
Yeah.
Keanu's been around.
The whole point is this, is that that's where I tune out. I think this all comes back to the gamer as a lifestyle, and when it becomes too much of your life versus just taking a step back and being okay. Do you already have my $70 just because you have a couple of cool trailers You got Keanu in there. Is that enough to get my pre-order versus waiting for the reviews to come out? And can I actually fucking play this game on my console without it crashing? Like, is people have to take a step back? I understand, though. I understand getting excited. But also...
Yeah, me too.
I think the reason these companies also do this, they know people have budgets. They know that they're competing for your dollars for something else. Not everyone has, you know, $1,000 a year to spend on new games. You may have $500. Maybe you have $400. I can buy maybe, in theory, you know, not talking about me, but in general, like, maybe I buy like 6-7 new AAA games a year. That's my budget. I can afford like $500. You're competing. This company, CD Projekt Red, is competing against Nintendo and everyone else. They know that. They're not stupid.
Yeah.
So, but they don't care that they got your money. They don't care if the game comes out and you can't fucking play it on your PS4, your base PS4. They don't care. They obviously didn't, or else they wouldn't have released it.
Their work is done.
Oh, we'll patch it up later. Maybe, yeah. Maybe you can play it in 3 months.
Getting to market and making money is the end goal. For
not all
big.
These companies, but
no,
like
for something that big, yes.
Yes, something with that much, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars at stake.
Recouping money is all they care about.
Yeah, and they could have waited, but they don't care. So that's why when I watch the Game Awards in particular, when they had an audience and they're hooping and hollering, I'm like, are these paid plants? Are they really getting that excited over a trailer for a game that won't be out for like 2-3 years that doesn't show gameplay? Or it's just a cinematic? I just don't... That's where I'm either too old... Or I'm not really a gamer or whatever. I'm disconnected. But I don't remember a time in my life where I was excited over a game that I ended up buying over a cinematic trailer or something like that. I wanted to see gameplay at least.
Sure.
I wanted to see it. So is there too much hype? Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know what we can do about it. I don't know if people are going to see this this disaster that's happened with Cyberpunk and be like, okay, I got to take a step back. I got God on this one. I'm not going to get God on the next one and wait 4 years and be disappointed.
Yeah.
All right. Ian, we got some voicemails to do.
Oh, hey, let's do these voicemails.
Oh, you sound excited, Ian. Anchor.fm/theCUpodcast.
I'm working up an appetite.
And you can keep it short and sweet, like 20 seconds. Say, hey, Pat, I like pork roll, and here you go. Here's what I want to say. I need some pork. I'm getting more pork roll tweets. It's, like it's getting carried in more parts of the U.S. now. They're on the pork roll bandwagon. Good old John Taylor is getting out there. So, we'll go through some of these. Okay, the first one. Do I got it here? I just had it. I'm so bad at this where I'm always thinking, oh, I got it ready to go. And then I don't find it again. So, let's see. Oh, here we go. I got it.
Paper Mario.
Sorry, here we go.
Ian and Pat, this is Brian from Two Punks, One Pod at Anchor FM. My question is, if you could take any franchise and change its genre forever, what would you choose?
What would you choose, Ian? You can swap out a genre of a game, if that even makes sense. From the Two Punks, One Pod, who now this is the second or third time they've...
I would take Call of Duty and turn it into a board game collection.
A board game collection or actually a board game?
A board game collection. Yeah, just a bunch of military men sitting around playing spades, cards.
Oh, I thought you meant they're collecting board games. Okay, a collection of board games.
I literally just pulled that
out
of my ass.
World War II, they're playing oldie Monopoly.
They're just sitting around playing Monopoly.
They're playing was there oldie Uno? When was Uno invented? The 70s or the 80s? That's what you would do?
Yeah, we can do some time futzing.
I always talked about how the weirdest one ever was Chase XU becoming like a action platform with the detectives from inside the car actually having their adventure. Nothing was ever ported any console back then. It's an arcade game that I've never seen in person, but it's a game. Okay, what's next here?
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Gino. Two questions for Ian. One, is there going to be a third part to your Stalker
tale? No. It will not be. He's gone over that before. Next.
And two, I'm curious to know if you get a lot of people that come into Luna asking to record for their YouTube channel or asking you for an interview since you've started working on the CU podcast. Thank you, guys. I hope to hear a lot more from you in the future.
You'll hear a little bit. Do you come in and ask for interviews?
So I can break this up into three things. Since I've started doing the podcast, people will come into the store to say hey because of the podcast. I've never been asked to do an interview at work, and I wouldn't do an interview at work because I'm at work. And Not because of the podcast, but people do come in and have asked if they could. Some people know me, some people don't, but they have asked if they can shoot some footage for a YouTube video or something like that on game hunting or whatnot. And
okay.
We're always we're happy to accommodate that as long as they don't film. I don't want to be filmed on the job.
Gotcha.
I always say you can't film me doing any sort of interactions with the customers, but you can film all the B-roll you want. You can film the case
you
while
don't
talking.
Want Billy That's, and Jay coming and doing a skit with you or a
right.
little thing.
I don't want to be part of your video, gotcha. But you can use the store, the displays. You can do whatever you want in terms of recording.
Gotcha.
Hey, Pat and Ian. It's Stephanie again. I want to first off by saying thanks to Ian for not taking any offense to my question. It really was all in good fun. Second, I really am so sorry to hear, Pat, that no one has ever had your back before. But honestly, I was being gentle on Ian. Don't even get me started on that asshat Tommy Tallarico. The guy has no room to talk. He can't even keep his story straight.
Ooh.
And the Amico seriously has as much appeal as a Tiger handheld. I really think a Tomy waterfall ring toss game will be more entertaining. But anyway, don't worry. I got both you guys' backs on that one. Love you guys. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Stephanie.
I'm more turned on the more
you got to stop, Pat. It's weird.
She's pushing all my buttons here. With the
waterfalls are great, though. I do love.
I was going to say, Stephanie, I have to criticize you a little bit here. There is more. A Tiger handheld has more use than the television Amico. Don't put down the handhelds there.
If it's skeet shooting, it's a good one.
But the Tommy waterfall, the Tommy waterfall things, I almost forgot about those.
I love those.
Those ring things?
I've always wanted, this is one of those weird things that I've had in my head for a long time. When I get a place with space, I want to get a full set of perfect waterfalls. Just beautiful condition.
There's more than one?
Lots of them. And I want to put them on shelves on the wall. I think they look so good.
Cool. Yeah, the basketball one.
There's
the
basketball,
ring toss. Okay, there was
ring toss.
One. Yes,
there's
there
a pyramid
was, yeah.
building
yes,
one.
Yes.
There's lots of them.
When did those come
and
out?
And then there's the mini ones. 70s.
I was going to say, were they 70s at first?
I think they came out in the 70s.
Those water games, they took a hit with video, with like handhelds. They were big. When I was like 4 or 5, there was a lot of those things around. Thanks, Stephanie. And not that no one has my back, but it seems like sometimes there have been people that have not gone to bat for me the way I would like them. I'll just say that. Like them too. All right.
There had a few.
What?
Hey, Pat and Ian. There's a long history of video game characters with children. Donkey Kong and DK Jr., Pac-Man and Pac-Man Jr., even Bowser had a few. My question is, if you guys are ever planning to have kids of your own. Thanks. Dave from Connecticut.
Thanks, Dave.
That was short okay. to the point. No, I don't ever plan on having children.
None of your business, Dave. I mean, that's what you guys have to. I mean, I can, I cannot.
I mean, it's a fair enough question. I don't think it's that personal. No, I don't plan on ever having kids.
I could, you know, could not.
Ever.
A lot of money. College is a lot of money, but hopefully college by then is not a thing.
No children.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Chano from Baltimore.
My sister always said, why have kids when you can have cats? That's yeah. my sister's favorite mm-hmm. thing.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Chano from Baltimore. Sometimes on the podcast, you talk about how to introduce old games to new people. When I think a friend who isn't into the hobby might like a retro game, I liken it to old movies. Like, the graphics and sound might be primitive, like a silent black and white film, but you can still appreciate the artistry in spite of the limitations. So that explanation works for people I know, but what do you guys say to people who might not know why old games are the way they are?
Thanks, Shiano. I don't know, but this is coming up every other week now with people trying to tell me Legend of Zelda is not fun or not a good game, and I'm just like over it. I'm sort of I try to say, listen, why is video games the only media that we put this through this weird lens where it because it came out back then, I got to use modern sensibilities to judge it. We don't do that with music, with movies, with TV shows. For some reason, video games has this weird prism where, oh, if I can't jump in and play it, understand it right away, it must be garbage. Or if it looks a little bit different than how I like games to look, then I can't do it. And there's just some people that don't like playing stuff that doesn't fit their sensibilities or just what they're used to. That's why what it comes down to. So I try to convince people that like something like Legend of Zelda. I hear people saying, oh, it's too confusing. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm like, dude, there was a manual. There was a map. It laid out for you the basics and how to get going, how to find the first, three or four dungeons. It wasn't like us 8-year-olds dropped it and like threw our NESs out the window. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know how to convince someone that they didn't grow up with it. They didn't grow up with like reading a manual or maybe like we're in a different time where people jump into games and there's tutorials and they basically hold hand you for the first portion of the game. I don't know how you get past that. When it comes to the way a game looks, listen, if you say that, then you can't watch any black and white movie because it doesn't have color. And it's automatically crap. I mean, no, you cannot judge entertainment outside of the time it was in. It's very tough to do that for the most part. It's tough.
My take on Zelda is, personally, I don't think the original Zelda is very fun. I just
Crazy.
I've never particularly loved the first Zelda. And I think there is something to be said about that. I think there is something to be said about what you're saying, too. I think the difference is people who are playing Zelda now for the first time are loading up a ROM or loading up a loose cartridge and trying to jump in and have fun with it. We take for granted the fact that we got big manuals with games, that it was part of the process of playing a game to read a manual, that we had magazines circulating with tips and tricks and maps in them, and there was a culture around the games that made them easier to jump into. Very few of us were ever jumping into a game cold back then. So I do understand that people who are trying to play the game by simply loading up a ROM these days are not going to find it very fun because they're not surrounded by the things that give the game context.
But that's not the game's problem. It's your problem. Like, that's not the game's problem. The game was made in a specific time.
Well, the game was made in a specific time, and it doesn't stand up to the progression of technology.
It shouldn't have to stand to the progression of technology. That's the whole point. Nintendo did not make Legend of Zelda in 2021. They made it in 86. That's the point.
I think it's very understandable to not like The Legend of Zelda today.
No,
you're
but
just
don't,
firing it up.
That's different than telling me it's a bad game. It is not a bad game. Don't give me that look. It's a classic game. It's a classic. If it wasn't a classic...
I firmly
if
believe
it was
in
not
things
a classic,
not aging well.
That's so weird. Okay. Legend of Zelda is probably one of the, you know, if you're looking at best console games of the 80s, it's probably in the top 20.
It's
easily
huge. It's important, but without those materials around you, it's not a fun game.
How many games back then could you play without the materials? Could you play those Ultima games that came with the fucking cloth map?
And I hate those Ultima games.
But there are classics, and you cannot tell me they're bad games, even if I'm not into it. That's the point. Don't tell me it's a bad game because you don't like how it was created at the time it was. You know, and how it was a bestseller and everyone liked it. It's also, we're also at a different time when it's no longer, I want to beat a game in 2 hours without knowing anything about it.
I don't know, man. The bread in the Middle Ages was probably important, but it did not age well.
The bread in the Middle Ages?
Yeah, I mean, recipes for bread advanced. The bread that was good back then is not good bread now. It doesn't matter what condition it was.
You're comparing me making food during the Black Plague?
I am saying that some things in
food?
I'm saying compared to other things, things age poorly.
You're comparing food to entertainment.
Yes. I'm comparing the creation of things. Just because that's how it was created then doesn't mean I have to think it's a great game.
So Shakespeare's bad because it was written in Old English?
Shakespeare fucking blows.
Okay, Ian. All right. We're going to agree to disagree there. Shakespeare blows. Okay. All right.
Julius Caesar is the only Shakespeare player.
Shakespeare blows. That's what it comes down to. You either think Shakespeare is good or he blows. Okay. Next up. Okay. Simple enough.
Carlos from California here. My question to you is, has there ever been something you thought you saw as a kid, whether a game or in a game, that ended up not being real when you look it up years later? Me, for example, I have a very vivid memory as a child of playing Beavis and Butthead on the Super Nintendo in a purple cartridge. Obviously, a certain SNES guidebook will tell you a purple cartridge was never made for the Super Nintendo.
Huh.
So has anything similar happened to you guys?
A Mandela effect with video games? Yes, and it's funny because I was actually talking about this with a friend the other night. For a long time, I was absolutely convinced there was a copy, there was a version of City Connection for the Game Boy. It does not exist. It's never existed.
You thought one existed.
But I was certain for a couple
of... It seemed like a game that should exist.
Yeah,
it
just seemed like something that should have existed, and I was...
And that would be your favorite game of all time, your favorite handheld
game. Oh, God. City Connection on a Game Boy with, like, little shitty Game Boy, yeah, it would be amazing. But, no, it doesn't exist.
To barely make out the cat.
God, I had a friend who was saying something about that the other night, and now I can't remember what his example was. But, yeah, that's one for mine.
I'm trying to think if I had one. Looking back, I was always pretty good, clear. I think I had one on the PC that I can't remember that I was sure I played something on the PC that was, or console, or I reversed the PC versus the console, but I can't think of it. I never had a lot of Mandela effect stuff, where it's a different reality. It's a different dimension.
Hi, this is Devin from Nova Scotia, Canada. I know you both used to be wrestling fans. I was wondering who your favorite wrestler tag team and stable of all time.
WrestleMania was yesterday. And we used to do a whole. Remember, we used to do a whole like 25 minutes on WrestleMania. Well, I didn't give a shit about WrestleMania this year. I didn't care.
No, I actually there is one match that I might go try to seek out somewhere. I heard the Cesaro Rollins match was very good.
Yeah, they're actually allowing Cesaro to win matches and actually realize this guy is fucking super talented.
But
guess what? You should have did that 5 years ago. Well, that's the whole problem with WWE. It's always like 5 years too late with these guys.
So favorite tag teams? All right, well, favorite
back
wrestler.
In the day.
Favorite wrestler? Macho Man Randy Savage.
He's up there for me.
With Eddie Guerrero being a very close second. Depending on the day, I might pick Eddie over Macho Man. Tag teams don't really have one, although I used to love watching the Japanese 3- and 4-man tag matches in Torimon, which became Dragon Gate. I really liked watching the Crazy Max matches. I feel like that's popular enough that some people will know what I'm talking about. Stable? LWO.
Oh, God. The worst one. You went there. Back in the day, my favorite tag team... this is like mid-80s, the Killer Bees. They weren't around a huge amount of time. Like, they weren't around for like 2 years in WWE, but I remember liking it. I liked the whole gimmick with the masks and this thing, but that's when I was watching the MSG, literally the MSG shows that they would show on the MSG network. So if you were outside of New York City, you never saw them wrestle, really. I used to love the Rockers. They were my favorite tag team.
I liked the Rock and Sock connection.
I like the Rockers, and I always was mad they never got the belts. They were always like the mid carders, but they never were like the main event tag team. It was always like Demolition or Legion of Doom or whatever. It was always like the Rockers. And then wrestlers of the time back then, I always go back to of course it's bad to say by now, but Chris Benoit used to be my favorite wrestler for years and years. I was there at WrestleMania 20 when he won MSG, and that was amazing that they actually put it on him. Obviously, it's unfortunate what happened after that. But back in the day, I always liked Mr. Perfect, even though you kind of knew that he was so good, Kurt Hennig, that
very good.
He was so fucking good that even as a heel, you're like, this guy is good. Like, even though he has that arrogant personality, like, this guy is, like, even when you were a kid, you knew that. I knew wrestling was fake.
Sure.
I was like 9, 10, but it was like, wow, this guy is super good. I'm not supposed to like him, but I like him. I used to use him in WrestleFest. He's Mr. Perfect in Ultimate Warrior. They're the perfect weird tag team that I used to always use. All right, what's next here?
Hey, Pat and Ian. It's Brent from Whippany, New Jersey.
Oh, Whippany.
What's going on? You only give us 20 seconds to talk now, yet you're pushing an hour-long intro. Anyway, please talk about growing up with Dusty Diamond All-Star Softball and NES. Having been a wiffle ball enthusiast growing up, I would have loved this game, but I only learned about it from watching reruns of the NES marathon. Anyway, you good? All right, take care.
Hey, Brent, I don't care from New Jersey. From one Jersey guy to another, you don't sass us on the podcast. You don't go Jersey on me. I'll send Stephanie after your ass if you do that. Dusty Diamond, talk about it. I mean, it's really a fantastic game. We talked about it. Did we play on the marathon this past year?
I don't think we did this past year, but we have most years. It's not a game that I grew up with. I remember seeing it in...
I think we rented it, or did Billy have it?
I remember seeing it in magazines good. And thinking this looks cool and reading about it, but I don't think I actually really gave it any time until I was in probably my late teens. So no, I didn't grow up with it, but it is a fun game. It's a neat idea. I definitely think there could be a Sandlot style baseball game put out now with weird characters that would do great.
I think you could do that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you got to read the manual to know the stats of it. There's dozens of players in Dusty Diamond.
Oh, there's a shitload.
Dozens of them.
The player select screen is crazy. They just cram all these little faces on there.
Dozens of them.
I'm always finding ones that I swear are, like, new.
But they all have different skills. Some fly in the air. Some do, like, super windup. Some, like, you can't tag them on the base path. They'll run you over. And they all have different faces. That's what's so impressive about this. I'm actually most impressed about the graphics. Not so much the fact that in the field, yeah, they just paste the faces on them, all the individual faces of the players, so you know who's who. But when they're batting, they all look different. They all look different when they're batting and when they're pitching. That, to me, is super impressive that no other baseball game did on the NES I can think of where the individual players, you can identify them by how they look, like every single one, all dozens of them. So that's impressive to me that they did that. All right, next.
To it, and... Oh. You, Pat and Ian from Cherry Hill.
Cherry Hill.
Yo, you should
not
don't
Jersey.
Sleep on WandaVision.
Not sleep on WandaVision.
I was disappointed the first episode. The second got me hooked. You'll really like it. It is definitely not a setup to future Phase 4. It's its own really good series.
I got you. Not to cut you off. You can tell someone's from Jersey, these two in a row, a little more aggressive than the sure. typical person. Got sassed by Brandon Eanes telling me to go watch WandaVision. I watched it, and like I said, it was better than I thought. It wasn't just a setup, but boy, am I loving Falcon Winter Soldier. I'm in love with that show so far. I mean, it has the potential. There's only six episodes. There's only three left. The way it's going, it can be like a top five MCU sort of property on its trajectory in my eyes. How many different nice themes are in there, and the action.
I do want to watch that one at some point.
Oh boy, it's been good. And only six episodes, not 10 or 12. Like, they know when to get in and out with it.
This is Paul from Raleigh, NC. What I want to know is, if the you from 20 years from now time traveled back to today and told you, check out this amazing game sequel, what game would you be hoping you brought back in time?
That's kind of fun.
Well, they would have all aged by then, so I would want to play them. That's what would have happened in the future.
Okay, Sassmaster. What would I have hoped for? I would love to see a Trap Gunner sequel. Let's do that.
Trap Gunner?
Let's do a Trap Gunner sequel.
Is that the arcade one?
No, Trap Gunner is a PlayStation game by Atlus that is similar to kind of like a Spy vs. Spy. It's a one versus one game where you can where you have melee attacks, but you also lay traps, and you have to like kill the other person.
Cool. I never heard of this.
Trap Gunner is a ton of fun, and it's not well known.
Oh, now, hidden. This is Ian's hidden gem
this
series.
This is a hidden gem.
Does it play better than Spy vs. Spy?
Yes, it does.
There's like different characters you can use.
Yeah, it just reminds me a little bit of it because yeah, you can set traps, you can detect traps, you've got melee.
Not a lot of games in the one versus one spy hunter genre. No. Excuse me, spy versus spy genre. Not a lot,
but it's neat.
And we'll do a few more here.
Hey, Pat and Ian, two quick questions for you. When's the big sell-off, Pat? You know I've been waiting on that. And second, what is some eBay etiquette that you could recommend for all the buyers and sellers out there, for the guys who are just getting into game collecting?
Hey, Daniel, you're getting froggy about me selling my games like the third or fourth time he's commented. It'll come, Daniel. You got some cash on you? You need some cash to buy this stuff. Some etiquette for eBay. Well, you're not supposed to do the backdoor deals. That's always bad. You're not supposed to do the backdoor deals. That ruins it for everyone, even for yourself sometimes. If someone has something, let the auction play out. Don't try to get it, you know. Feel like you're pulling one over. There's no honor amongst thieves. I get that. There's no honor amongst game collectors for the most part. You know, some of us have, but a lot don't. We get that.
One thing that I would say is if you make an offer on something and the person doesn't respond, don't make the offer again or try to get through to them again. They saw it and they declined it.
No, they don't decline unless they click decline, though. There's a click decline button.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is don't.
Oh, if they decline.
Yeah. Like, people.
You're allowed to offer more, though.
I just think that, well, I just notice that people seem to want, you don't have to, some people don't even click decline. They get a lot of offers. I don't think you need to manage every single one of them.
Are you white knighting for eBay sellers with best offers? Like, what's happening right now? You know,
because people who make best offers are generally assholes. And I get that best offers are a thing.
I make best offers and stuff and get away with some best offers.
It's part of it. What I'm saying is you don't...
Assholes? That's why it's there.
Some people make very low, low offers, though.
Well, you do, automatic rejections for those.
You make the low offer, but you don't get salty if the person doesn't...
I've gotten super low offers for autographed NES guidebooks where it's like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm not doing that, but
auction? Autographed guidebooks?
The returns.
Oh, the returns.
I put them for sale. I put them up for or best offer. I don't auction them, or best offer. And sometimes I've got super low offers. But you know what I did after that? I put down the auto rejection thing. I was like, all right, I'll do the auto rejection thing where anything below her, you know.
Yeah, maybe I don't really have any eBay etiquette to offer. Maybe I just...
I think he's been on eBay for a while.
Maybe I just tried to say something. Yeah.
I was going
to
say, it's like, that's the weirdest thing. It's like,
I have nothing to say.
Oh, these poor eBay sellers and their best offers get these... They got to click reject. It takes so much time out of there. Leave them alone.
Leave them alone.
Do you know, like, some vinyl guys, I guess, that got upset over this? It's like, wow, you went hard for that. I'm going to say that... First of all, if you do it,
fake it till you make it. I had to come. I had to come intensely.
Shakespeare sucks, and you white knighting for the eBay
Shakespeare
sellers.
Can absolutely eat my ass.
Oh god, he can't. He's dead. He's been dead for like 800 years.
I'll reanimate him just so he can
with that mustache. It'll tickle
he'll
you.
He'll rise out of the grave right into my ass. I'm just gonna put
that
right
mustache
under the grave.
Should make you laugh. It'll tickle you. I will say this about it. If you're a seller, if you put down a best offer option, make sure you really want a best offer. Because sometimes they put it down. Just
yeah, that's
interest.
What I meant.
Yeah, that's what Ian meant. Because I've done it where it was like a $50 game and like offered them, you know, I'll offer you like $46 and it's like they're insulted by that. And it's like, well, okay, then what's
$4 less than what you have? What are you hoping for, $49.50?
Well, that, thanks, Ian. Now you're opposite. You should be on their side. So that's what I mean. Like, the best offer thing is funny. Either do it or don't.
I'm fluid when it comes to eBay.
You're fluid?
Yeah.
You're eBay fluid?
I'm eBay fluid.
Okay. But that's what I'm going to say when it comes
one
to
one more.
That.
I got to pee and then I got to eat.
We're going to do one more. What the hell? It's from the Two Punks, One Pod. You guys got to slow down the number because you made two in one.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Brian from Two Punks, One Pod at Anchor FM. My question for you is, would you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
All right, I was going to give you credit, Two Punks in One Pod. I was going to try to help you out. We're giving you free plugs, basically, in essence, for your podcast. You got to be kidding me, guys. You're killing me now. All right, well, that's it for this very, very enlightening and fun. It's one of our more fun voice message segments.
We put the fun in Funcast.
And fungible.
And fungible. All right.
That's it for the CU Podcast. Goodbye. We're in rare form. Man, if it's like this, we might go to 400 episodes. We'll see.
Real awake today.
You said you weren't awake. It was all the extra moisturizer seeping through.
It is.
All right, that's it. Yeah, again, I'm on Twitch Wednesday afternoons or Wednesday late afternoons, early evening in the East Coast. Ian will never show up.
I'll be there with bells on.
Just people wanted you to say hi. They love you. Twitch.tv/countrycode. And then I'll have a new flea market manifest by the end of the month. NES Punk, maybe in May. Maybe for my birthday. Maybe my birthday's in a month. I'm going to be old. All right, Ian's done. I'll see you later.
Bye.